right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. That's one artist, two songs. You pick the bumps that we play. And so request them now. And it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yeah, it is Tuesday, and we're here till 5 a.m. We're going to talk about the history of the Trapper Keeper. Does everybody remember their Trapper Keeper? And then we're going to just go back in time and talk a little bit about some of the school stuff that we missed and textbooks that we had and school supplies. We got some behind-the-scenes secrets of New York City taxi drivers that we're going to talk about. We got some food things, again, that we're going to talk about, especially the, you know, since the NFL season has just kicked off a few weeks here. We're going to go around the stadiums to find out what some of the craziest food being offered at NFL stadiums. And also, Tom Appel is just about to join us. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. And he is here to answer any and all of your car and automotive-related questions. You're looking to get a car, or lease one, buy a new one, get a used one, question in general about cars at all, any automotive question, he will take it and he will answer it live. So get in, call, text right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for any automotive-related questions. Lots of stuff to talk about with Tom. So that's coming up, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, questions for Tom, 2 for Tuesday requests. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And, you know, you should subscribe to our podcasts. They're free. And they're great. And every single moment of each show is podcast. And then you just go to iTunes or any place where you get the podcast, subscribe. They're free. And they will automatically show up at your device and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So all that is coming up here on the show. So let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Chagrou. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
All right. I'm going to miss the game tonight.
Yes.
I will be hosting my screening of Phantasm at the AMC Rosemont 18. So I will see about the first like 40 minutes of it, I think. And then I'm sure as soon as the movie is over, everybody in the movie theater will probably turn their phones on and find out what the score is at that point. But yeah, I was upset to see what kind of performance the Cubs gave yesterday. It was aggravating. So, well, yeah, they play the Rockies tonight, 7:05, and this is it. This is the wild card. They got to win this game, otherwise the season's over.
Yep, and Kevin Powell will be joining us to recap it for folks like you who might not have been able to see it live and discuss whatever happens after.
So we'll have Kevin in then tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Kevin Powell will be here, and we'll talk all about what happened with the Cubs and sports in general. You know, the Sox season just ended. We can talk about that because he covered it all season long.
Hawks
begin Thursday.
Bears
are
NFC
playing.
NFC North leading Bears.
Yes. Got to talk about that last Bears game with Kevin. That's there you go. So, all right. Well, so we will recap everything that happens at Wrigley Field tonight when we come in tomorrow morning when we have Kevin Powell on. And there you go. So that's coming up. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Good. Well, I'm recovering from something I saw last night. I came home from a meeting with some of my friends. And Jeannie, when I walked in the door, who I hadn't seen all day, had on her Brewers hat and was doing a little victory dance in my hallway.
Of course she was.
So, you know, hopefully by daylight I'll be recovered from that whole scene.
It's tough to watch another team celebrate at Wrigley. You know what I mean? Like they're out on our field and they're jumping up and down and putting their T-shirts and their hats on.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And it's the same thing when your girlfriend's doing it in your home.
Right.
Your home court.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's tough.
But other than that, no, I'm good, Nick.
All right. Well, go Cubs, playing the Rockies tonight.
Cubs.
And there you go. And again, we'll get caught up on it. I'll get caught up on it after my screening. And I am screening Phantasm tonight. I hope you guys can come out. If you're not a baseball fan, I would love you to come. Even if you are a baseball fan, come out and see it. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made. And by the way, next week we're going to have, later this week, Don Coscarelli, the director of Phantasm, is going to be on the show because he's got a new book about his life and movie making that he's going to come in and talk about. He's going to be in Chicago on Monday, October 2nd. He's going to be signing books at the Music Box Theater and they're going to show Bubba Hotep. And we'll talk to Don Coscarelli later in the week. But yeah, tonight, Phantasm, only $10, parking is free. It's the big 4K digital restoration. It's impeccably beautiful looking, and it's scary and funny and weird and a classic horror movie for October. And this is October, and it's horror movie time. Oh, you know what, Dan? I got to bring out Fartenstein and Count Fartula.
Yes.
It's October. It's Fartenstein and Count Fartula time. So we'll get those guys, and we'll bring them out tomorrow. We'll debut them tomorrow, right when Kevin's here. We'll do a little...
Nice.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there we are. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. By the way, if you want to reserve your seats for Phantasm, you can right now at amctheaters.com. amctheaters.com. Go to the seating chart, pick the seats you want, and we will see you tonight. Starts at 8 o'clock. Get there a little bit early, have a couple cocktails, have some food. I'll introduce the movie at 8, and we'll talk about it afterwards. So there you go. All right. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. And you can check out the websites consumerguide.com and also cgdailydrive.com for more information. And you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you have any kind of automotive-related question of all, of any time, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number, and the phone lines are open right now. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good. This Cubs thing has me in limbo, but I'm pretty good.
Yeah, everybody feels that way, I think. I think it's been a little rough. It's a rough go of it. You know, it was hard to see the Brewers celebrating at Wrigley yesterday. So.
Yeah, and I'm sort of torn. If the Cubs are out of it, I'm sort of for the Brewers, but now I'm mad at them. I'm not in a good place.
No, I understand. I think a lot of us are feeling the same thing. And
Yeah.
Well, got to beat the Rockies tonight. That's the idea.
That's the thing.
That's it. All right. I'll tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive as we do each month.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Consumer Guide Automotive, we've been around since 1967. We've been reviewing new cars, used cars, doing all sorts of stuff like that, including publishing hardcover books. You can find those sometimes at the bookstore. We are online these days. That's consumerguide.com. That's where all our new car and used car stuff lives. There's also our blog, the CG Daily Drive blog. That's cgdailydrive.com. We try to have some fun with the news. Also, our long-form reviews of test cars we have at the office live there.
Mm, cool. Well, speaking of that, what have you been driving lately?
Oh, good question. I just spent almost a week in the Lexus LS500H. That is Lexus's big sedan. That's their flagship sedan in hybrid trim. Very big car, close to $100,000 as equipped.
Whoa!
And this is, it's either a lot of money if you think of it that way, or kind of a deal compared to things like a 7 Series BMW or S-Class Mercedes.
Sure. Yeah.
But nice ride, very well built. Perhaps not as high performance as those other cars I just mentioned, but beautiful interior and very smooth riding.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. And what else have you been driving in the last few weeks?
Gosh, what have I just driven recently? The Hyundai Kona. This is Hyundai's subcompact, new entry to the subcompact crossover field.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this car. I think this is going to make a big dent in the small crossover arena. It is surprisingly roomy and refined, and the prices are great. You can get one for as little as $22,000.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Very cool. And all these reviews and all of you guys, everybody can see what cars you've been driving. Anybody else in the office been driving anything that is worth mentioning?
You know, we just had a Mustang GT through the office with the Performance Pack 2. That's sort of an elevated performance version of the Mustang GT. Yeah, they loved that. That review just went up, so that's up there right now.
Okay, all right. That's that Mustang is, I believe, my favorite kind of car.
Yeah, it's a fine thing.
They're just the coolest cars ever. So, and by the way, speaking of Mustangs, you know they're showing Bullitt on the big screen again?
The original Bullitt?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that was coming to the big screen. That's great.
Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary, if you want to feel old. It's the 50th anniversary of Bullitt, and it's as part of Fathom Events. You can go to fathomevents.com, and it's only two nights, but it's going to be on the big screen. And
Yeah. Long understood to be the best chase scene ever in a movie.
One of the greatest. One of the great. Have we talked about that before, Tom? Favorite chase scenes?
I think we have. Yeah,
I think we've talked about that because I know, like, same director. No, not same director, but like French Connection is up there.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And To Live and Die in L.A. is good. How about Ronin? Rowan.
I love the chase. I was just going to say that. The chasing in Rowan is fantastic.
It's amazing.
it's also not cars you expect to see in a chase scene.
Exactly. Exactly.
The 5 Series BMW is cool, but the Peugeot is strange. But
yeah.
It's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And that, of course, you talk about unusual cars for car chases. You know, you got the Italian Job, which is pretty classic, too.
So. Yeah, I just watched that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, the original, obviously.
Yes, yes, Michael Caine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great stuff. Okay, Tom, hang on a second, okay?
Will do.
We're going to take a break, and then Tom, we've got a bunch of car-related news stories to talk about and some of the stuff that is in the CG Daily Drive articles. And also, any and all automotive and car-related questions that you have, he's here to help out at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. You're here, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. You pick the bumps. We'll play them later. Right now, Tom Appel is with us. He visits us once a month, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and he contributes to their Daily Drive blog. You can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we're talking some car news stories and answering any and all of your car and automotive-related questions. So get them in now. Talk or text 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So there's a story here that I got in front of me about used sedans that are still cheap, but the prices are going up. So What's going on there? Why are the prices going up?
Yeah, that's a good question. Mid-size sedans, which are overwhelmingly the bulk of the sedan market, new car sales have been depressed in that category. However, the used cars are not going down in price. Normally over the summer, when car sales are high, you'll see that used car prices will drop a little bit because there's downward pressure because everyone's trading in their cars, creating a small glut of used cars. But this year they're sticking around. And part of the problem with that might be that the transaction price on new cars is going up, so there's just a lot of demand for cheaper, more affordable used cars. The average price of a new car now, about $36,000, $37,000, where a four-year-old sedan, something like a Malibu or something like that, would go for typically around $13,000. So what analysts think is happening is just people are getting scared out of the market. Because new cars are so expensive that not everyone's going new anymore.
So you talk to this article that I'm reading, they talk to this guy, Jonathan Smoke, who's a chief economist for the Kelley Blue Book.
Yeah.
And they said they had 11 straight weeks of price appreciation in the spring and summer. And
yep.
They usually see depreciation in used vehicles like that. So
yeah, you should. Just the minutes that new car sales go up, you should see just some downward pressure on used cars, and that didn't really happen this year. And that's very interesting.
Yeah.
What that means is it's just a little bit more expensive for you to go out and buy a used car right now.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question about the Kelley Blue Book?
Yeah.
How long has it been around?
Kelley's been around for a long time. I don't know how long.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortably 50 years, I believe.
Yeah, and this is the go-to, right? The Kelley Blue Book is pretty much the go-to for
pricing. Yeah, there's really two organizations. There's Black Book and Blue Book. They're different organizations. Black Book tends to do like used car books for dealerships. And Blue Book is the one that's more accessible to the general public, KBB.com.
Right.
Great resource to check out prices. They do a really nice job with things like trade-in price and private sale. It's a great resource.
Yeah, I've always, been interested. I've always found it, I've been curious about how long it's been around because it's becomes necessary when you're looking to get a car. It really has to check it out or as a resource.
Yeah, you should really know what your used car trade-in is worth. You should get a look at what the average transaction price is there. And Kelley kind of stepped up their game when TrueCar came along, because TrueCar started offering this analysis of average transaction prices in an area. And now Kelley's doing something more or less the same, which is great, because now if you're a consumer, you have these two great resources to go to try to narrow in what it is you should be paying for a car.
Okay, interesting. Okay, it's KBB.com, correct?
Yeah, right. Great resource.
Great resource. There you go. And everybody's getting the price of sedans are going up. That was the first story we're talking about. 815 area code has a text, Tom.
Uh-huh.
When a hybrid drives, does it have an onboard generator that recharges the batteries as it drives down the road?
That's a good question, and the short answer is yes. Generally, hybrid batteries are charged when you brake because that's wasted energy. So instead of applying the brakes, what you're doing is turning a generator that charges the battery. However, to keep the battery charged if you're on a long trip, it's entirely possible that as you lift off the gas and you're coasting for a while, that same generator will charge the batteries as well.
Ah, okay. Hey, you know, I don't think we've mentioned this since we've moved into the new facility here, Tom. You know, I ride in. Dan is kind enough to give me a lift because I don't have a car, and he doesn't live very far from me, so he's really kind enough to give me a lift, and I always appreciate it, Dan. I don't vocalize that enough, but I really appreciate you doing that. And we ride in together, and now we are in an indoor parking lot here, as opposed to at the Trib building. It's outdoors, and what really struck me is all of these charging bays. For the cars, you know,
oh, cool.
There's a ton of them, and it's like as soon as you turn left, we go into the parking lot. Dan, we turn left. Tesla's all over the place. There's like, and all these cars are just all these cars reserved. That area is reserved for cars that need to be charged.
Right. There's 8 stalls just on that level.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I'd never seen that many cars being charged in that one area, and all these spots reserved for the cars that need to be charged up during the night.
Yeah, and that's fairly forward thinking to have those ready, because that demand probably doesn't justify that much charging opportunity yet.
Yeah.
But it's around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're set here across the street. I'm just saying, they're set. 630 area code says, hi, I have a Volvo V70 wagon and I love it. I really want a Volvo C70. I'd get comfortable and give the wagon to my kids. A convertible and give the wagon to my kids. Is that a good purchase?
The caller doesn't say whether or not they're talking about new or used, because the C70 has been discontinued for a while. It was a fine car. It wasn't a great convertible. It was just a little bit flexy, as I recall. There were better hardtop convertibles at the time. If they're talking about the used C70, there isn't a new one right now.
Okay. So then obviously you'd have to get a used one if you were to go that route. Okay. Jesse says, I'm interested in the 2018 Cadillac ATS-V manual coupe. It's impossible to find for a test drive. Is it true that this vehicle is being discontinued?
The coupe is not being discontinued, but you might have a hard time finding the ATS-V. The ATS is Cadillac's compact car, and it was meant to compete with the BMW 3 Series and the 4 Series. Sales have been fairly poor, so Cadillac is discontinuing the sedan at the end of this year, and only the coupe lives on into 19. The ATS-V is the high-performance version of that car, and that's a twin-turbocharged 3.6-liter V6. It's a very fast and very fun car, but you might have a hard time finding one.
Okay.
And if a dealer doesn't have one, they might not be super cooperative in helping you find one, so you may have to call around or check online. They're out there. I don't think they've been discontinued yet. I'm pretty sure they roll into 2019, mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure you can get one. Finding one that's a manual in addition might be difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Finding anything in a manual is difficult, isn't it, Tom?
It's extremely difficult. Dealers tend not to stock them.
Yeah. Now, how is Cadillac doing otherwise?
Oh, that's a good question. Cadillac's been stagnant for a couple of years while they waited for their crossovers to come online. They came out with the XT5, was it a year and a half ago? That was their midsize crossover that they badly needed, and it promptly became their best-selling car. They've just launched the XT4, which is a compact crossover, which is the hottest segment in luxury right now. Probably a great thing for Cadillac.
Mm, okay. All right. Tom, why don't you hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right. Tom Appel is with us, and we are talking cars. You can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. If you have any car or automotive-related questions, he's here to help you out and give you some answers and help you out and give you some advice. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we'll get back to our conversation with Tom Appel right after we break for the news, which is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the history of the Trapper Keeper and reminiscing a little bit about school, our school days. We've got a lot more that we're going to be talking about here, and including behind-the-scenes secrets of New York City taxi drivers, and also some food that's being served at NFL stadiums. We'll go through some of that. That's all coming up. We would love you to join us. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And it's Tuesday, which means two for Tuesday. You mean two for Tuesday? Get your requests in right now. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs. Right now, we are welcoming to the show again Tom Appel. He's our car guy, and he joins us once a month to talk everything automotive. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to their Daily Drive blog, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he is here to talk about some car stories, news stories, and answer your questions at 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, so we were talking about, you know, how is Cadillac doing, and you know, in general, and, you know, what's been stagnant. But you wrote a piece about five cars that no one is buying.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that and discuss these cars and one of the reasons why nobody's buying these things. What's interesting piece you wrote.
Yeah, this was a look at car sales so far this year going through, well, I think it was through August.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an assessment of why they're selling poorly and why I think maybe just buyers are staying away. So one of the cars on there, and this one's interesting because everyone heralded this as sort of a great move, the Lincoln Continental.
Mm.
This was a replacement for a car that no one was talking about, the Lincoln MKS. This was a large Lincoln and frequently used for limousine service, but no one was buying these cars. So Lincoln thought a couple of things. One, they could freshen it and give it some fresh styling. And if you look at it, it looks a little bit like an Audi. It's a very European look, and I think it's relatively attractive. And they went away from the very confusing alphanumeric naming structure that they were using, brought back this great heritage name, Continental. So there was this brief moment of excitement when everyone thought that this car might finally do it for Lincoln and they might sell some of these things. But it, as it turns out, there's just no interest in it whatsoever. And it's an interesting car, too, in that it's a full-size luxury car, but it doesn't play in anywhere near the price stratosphere as does that Lexus I was talking about driving earlier this week, or the Mercedes-Benz S-Class, or the BMW 7 Series. Prices start closer to the 50s and then rise from there. But, yeah, they're having a hard time selling these things right now. What they do for the year. They have done about 6,000 cars
this year. 5,677.
Yeah, and that's about half what Cadillac is doing with the very similar XTS. So,
wow.
Yeah, this car isn't long for the world. And, in fact, we know that this is going to be discontinued. It'll probably go through 19, and that'll probably be it.
Wow. Now, what about the Buick Cascada? Or Cascada?
Yeah, the Cascada is an interesting car. This has been ill-fated for a couple of reasons. People who are paying attention this summer when the deal was going down, General Motors sold its Opel division to PSA. That's the company that owns Peugeot over in Europe. And in doing so, they sold the manufacturing that produced the Cascada. The Cascada was always kind of selling slow anyway. This is a compact convertible, kind of cute, not very sporty, and a little bit small for Americans. Wasn't selling well anyway, but when they realized that this Opel deal was going down, they really just stopped pushing it.
Wow. I mean, looking at the sales year to date, they've only sold 3,100.
Yeah, that's very slow by U.S. sales standards.
Yeah, geez. The Ford C-Max.
Yeah, the C-Max is a fascinating car. This was a car that came out, and this is a hybrid. And this is a hybrid vehicle very much in the vein of the Prius. And when Ford first brought this vehicle out, they had advertised 45 mpg. They had gotten a 45 mpg rating from the EPA based on their research that they handed to the EPA. Very embarrassingly, they had to revise those numbers down twice.
Oh, man.
Yeah, people started complaining. The 45s quickly became 37, and then it dropped to something like 35. And it was a disaster. By the time they were done with the revisions, the public had just generally lost interest in the C-Max. And it's kind of a shame. It's a very useful shape. It's kind of fun to drive. It's a good little car. It's just not nearly as efficient as it should be, or nearly as efficient as a Prius.
Or nearly as efficient as they said it was at first.
Right, yeah.
Sales to date there, 6,200 Ford C-Max.
Yeah, and those are slow sales for a Ford. Yeah.
Now, how about this one, the Jaguar XJ? This thing's not selling at all.
Not selling at all. The Jaguar XJ, if people remember the Series 3, for example, that survived through the 70s and the 80s was an absolutely stunning vehicle, one of the most beautiful sedans ever sold in the U.S. It was known for being gorgeous. It was known for its incredible ride quality and known for being terribly unreliable in the British tradition. But people loved the car, and they immediately recognized the car. Sadly, the car that they're selling right now that they call the XJ doesn't really look very much like a Jaguar.
Mm.
And it doesn't really compete well in that class. And people have just turned away from it. As Americans are already turning away from sedans anyway, as we know.
Yeah.
But this one's selling especially poorly.
Really bad. 1,100 cars have been sold year to date.
Yeah, yeah. It's dismal.
Wow. And then the final one is the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross.
Yeah, this one's interesting because there's a lot of story here. Mitsubishi had gone through a fairly troubled time as a result of its relationship to Mercedes-Benz and to Hyundai. That they were all sort of tied together for a little bit, and they were sharing parts and stuff like that. And Mitsubishi just really didn't have the resources to build a lot of stuff. And right now, the only products they sell are two versions of the Mirage, which is a tiny subcompact three-cylinder car, and three crossovers, the Outlander Sport. Those are the ones that are selling pretty well. And they just brought out this vehicle, which was supposed to be sort of a high-endy vehicle. It was going to push people away from expecting discounts on Mitsubishis, but no, people aren't having any part of it.
Wow.
It's interesting that it just doesn't work as a sort of classier version of what Mitsubishi offers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an interesting article about cars that nobody's buying. Interesting stuff. 815 area code has a text, Tom, and this is going along with something that I wanted to talk about too. Has this administration's tariffs starting affecting car prices yet? And something big happened yesterday.
Yes.
With the White House making a deal with Mexico and Canada, which should benefit dairy farmers and automakers as well.
Yeah, the deal that went down is interesting, and the ramifications aren't super clear yet to the auto industry, but there are two interesting points that hang open and are noteworthy. First, we don't really know what's going on with the steel and aluminum tariffs yet,
right?
And those have a big impact on car prices. But the other one that we do know about is interesting. The new agreement requires that 75% of a vehicle be domestic content, and that's domestic as in Mexico, Canada, or U.S., to be free of tariff when moving across borders. That's up from 62.5% in the old NAFTA agreement. This is probably not a very big deal because most of these cars are built here and they have supplier farms and supplier companies that are right there giving them the stuff that they need. So I think that in terms of domestic content, 75 is probably a workable deal because this is a scale anyway. It's going to go up to 75 over the next few years. So I don't think this is going to matter very much.
Okay. And have the tariffs affected car prices yet?
I don't know if they've affected car prices yet, but they were going to. There's like deals going on in other countries that are very interesting. Mercedes-Benz, for example, is going to be importing its GLC car from India, and this was actually a function of trying to avoid some tariffs here in the U.S. A very strange situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's still going to be the plan.
Okay. All right. A couple more texts here, Tom. 336 area code says, has Tom heard about the 2019 Jeep Cherokee? Will he get to test drive one? This is the first SUV that's caught my attention.
2019 Cherokee. The Cherokee is Jeep's midsize crossover. It's sort of a smallish midsize crossover. Yes, I just drove a Cherokee, as a matter of fact, not very far. The interesting thing about the Cherokee for 19, it will be available with a 2-liter turbocharged engine in some configurations. If you like the old Cherokee, the new one's not that different. The big difference is the powertrain and some nicer interior materials and more safety equipment.
Okay. All right. 312 area code says, hi, Tom. I have a 2010 Honda Insight in mint condition. The dealer calls me constantly to trade it. I know they're no longer made. Should I keep it or sell it?
Well, actually, there's a new Insight right now. Often dealers just call you to tell you there's a lot of money in your trade so they can get you to come in and buy something else.
Right.
I don't know if there's a whole lot of demand for used Insights. I kind of doubt there is. New Insight's a pretty nice car. I'm actually going to drive that Thursday.
Okay.
For the first time. I've heard good things, though. But I wouldn't worry about trying to get that in there for a trade. If it's running well for you, you know, you're getting great mileage, it'll be worth a lot forever because it's a Honda.
Okay.
No hurry.
Okay, very good. Very good. By the way, Tom Appel is with us. He's a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. If you got a question or a concern that's automotive related, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a sad story, a little headline right here, Tom.
Yeah.
Volkswagen squashes the Beetle.
Yeah, the Beetle's gone.
Oh, end of the line for the iconic bug. That makes me sad.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. Car guys are not super busted up about this because we've never really embraced this sort of Beetle revival as a real Beetle.
Right.
It's been a front drive, you know, water cooled Volkswagen based car that pretty much it's mechanically identical to a Golf. So we never loved it.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was cute. It made a great convertible. It was surprisingly roomy for a coupe, and if you had one, you probably loved it.
We have a newswoman here. Andrea Darlis has a convertible bug.
Oh, okay.
And loves it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great little car. Problem is, it's very hard to update retro. And they have once, and it sold pretty well. But ultimately, Volkswagen is working on another retro product. There's actually going to be an electric version of the microbus.
Oh no! Really?
Year or two. So yeah, I think they're going to limit their retro products to one per product cycle. I think.
I see. Now the Beatles have been along. When did the Beatles begin? Was it during World War II?
Yeah, it was actually Adolf Hitler actually commissioned the Beetle, and Ferdinand Porsche, actually designed the vehicle. Production was scheduled to begin, but then the war took over. And it wasn't until right after World War II that the German factories started cranking out Beetles, and they started being imported to the U.S., I think in the late 40s or early 50s. And production didn't cease until surprisingly recently. There were still factories going on in weird countries. So I think 22 million total Beetles were built over time.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It's insane.
Wow. And what about the people who have Beetles? When they stop making them, you know, the cars can still be fixed and things like that, right?
Working. Yeah, it's all very common Volkswagen parts, so no problem at all getting service.
No problem getting service there. Okay. All right, no more Beetle. Oh. All right. Tom, why don't you hang out, okay?
Will do.
All right, there you go. Tom Appel is with us. If you have a car-related or automotive-related question of any kind, 312-981-7200. And check out Consumer Guide Automotive and follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. More car stories and your questions at 312-981-7200 after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. All right. And, we're here till 5. Tom Appel is with us. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And if you've got any car or automotive-related questions, you can call us. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Tom Appel. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, we got a bunch of texts that have come in, questions from our listeners. 630 area code says, hi, I was the one that texted about the Volkswagen convertible. Can you recommend a better option for a hardtop four-seat convertible that is used?
Wow, used hardtop four-seat convertible. BMW was doing those on the 3 and 4 series a couple of two generations ago? Yeah, and that's, I don't know what those go for used. I know it's a pretty reliable top. But, yeah, BMW 3 Series convertibles might be a good way to go. Mm. Can't think of another one affordable offhand.
Okay. 218 area code says, how well does Mazda's redesigned Model 3 hold up? I'm thinking of buying it used. Also, how safe are cars that connect to the Internet?
Wow, two crazy separate questions. Mazda 3 is a great car. Always liked the Mazda 3, still like the Mazda 3. It was freshened a couple of years ago, and it's just as good as ever. In terms of safety versus connected to the Internet, so far cars are not directly connected to the Internet. There's a lot of services that are Internet-dependent, but for a car to be connected to the Internet, it's usually through your phone. Mm. And there have been a couple of very high highly publicized cases of people being able to hack into a car, but they were really, really trying. And to the extent to which that's worth the effort, so far, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
It's going to be a much bigger problem with autonomous vehicles.
Got it. Okay. But the Mazda 3, you like?
Like the Mazda 3.
Okay. Jerry in Aurora says, I haven't read much about the Ford Mustang sales in the U.S. versus international and overseas. How is the new four-cylinder doing versus the V8 GT, since neither are available globally in the past?
That's a very interesting question. I do not know the split right now. I suspect that roughly 75% are the four-cylinder and the rest are GT. That might be maybe... The V8's a little bit better than that because the cars have gotten expensive and the buyers have gotten older, so they can afford a little bit more. But the four-cylinder is the 2.3-liter turbocharged engine. I think that's 310 horsepower in the Mustang, and that is a bunch of power. That's where the V8 was just a couple of years ago. So if you're looking for something sporty, the base engine is a great engine.
Okay.
The V8 is just over the top.
Okay. 262 area code says, how are long-term conclusions on Ram and Jeep eco-diesels? Any major issues?
I'm not aware of any major issues. There was a recall on those, and I cannot remember what it was for. But the fuel economy has been very good. I'm not sure that the 3-liter diesel is currently available in the Grand Cherokee, but it is available in the Ram, or will be soon. Ram was just redesigned for 2019, and I don't think the diesel is in it for 19, but it will be for 20. You'd have to check with a dealer about availability, but it is coming back.
Okay. And then finally, 224 area code says, any chance Volvo is bringing back the S40?
The S40 was the compact sedan. I don't know if they're going to do that. The S60 was just redesigned. That's going to be coming out soon. Something smaller than that may or may not work for Volvo. I don't think they're going to do it because Volvo just opened a factory in the United States for larger cars. They'd have to import that one, and I'm not sure there's money in that for them.
Okay. All right. Here's an interesting story. What's going on with Elon Musk now? He's on Joe Rogan's show, evidently, you know, appearing to smoke marijuana. And he's got to repay, how much is he, $20 million or something like that now?
I've heard 20 and I've heard 40, but I think the number is 20.
Okay. And what? How is it? I mean, so what Tesla's is not, this is not good for Tesla. It's been a rough go.
No, it's been a rough go, and it'll be very interesting to see how things turn out now that part of that settlement where he had to come up with 20 grand also meant that he could no longer be chairman of the board mm-hmm. of Tesla.
Mm-hmm. But
yes, I think he has to abandon that post for 3 years. He remains CEO, so he's still running the company day to day. But he's not chairman of the board. I don't know if he has a board seat at all. That's a good question. CEO probably does. But yeah, I don't know. It does seem like Tesla is cracking. Elon Musk is starting to crack under the pressure.
Yeah.
Because, of course, this whole SEC settlement has to do with him allegedly just saying he's going to take the company private so that he could mess with people who were short selling the company, which is all sorts of illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so the luxury rivals, though, are really taking over, as you know, Tesla's not doing very well. So the luxury rivals are getting into the electric market.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to watch. Now, the Tesla Model 3, the car we've been watching for a long time that allegedly 500,000 people put $1,000 deposits on, they've been making a lot of them lately. And I think it was in August that they sold something like, or not sold, I'm sorry, but produced 16,000 of these, which is one of these numbers that skews the entire EV market. It's so many electric cars. But he's having a hard time delivering those, which is interesting. So the question is he really having a hard time delivering them, or are the buyers not out there? That said, his more profitable cars, the Big S and the Big X crossover, are going to face an awful lot of competition very soon. There's a new Jaguar coming, a new Porsche coming, a new Audi coming, and they're all targeting those cars fairly specifically. And they're new and they're fresh, and the dealer networks are better. So this is right now the battle is on.
Oh wow! Okay, well we'll keep our eyes peeled on that. Hey, you know, we talk about this right around this time every year, and because of in the wake of Florence, we always ask questions. We did this, you know, like during hurricane season. This happens all the time. What happens to flooded cars and other auto questions about, you know, in the wake of Florence?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it, the answer differs by insurer and if the owner of the car actually has insurance. Generally, your higher-end insurance companies will destroy the cars or sell them for parts. Some of the cars can be retitled as salvage cars, which means they could be made to run again, but they have to have a salvage title so that the buyer would be aware that this car was, in fact, wrecked or flooded or something like that. So it depends on the insurer, it depends on the state, and it depends on local laws. But every now and then, you hear a story about some flood cars getting into the hands of private parties, and you don't want that. You don't want to buy one of these cars by accident. And the thing to ultimately always do is just get a Carfax report from anyone who's buying a car. And if it turns out it's from a state where they just suffered a hurricane, you might want to look at that carefully.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, that's the big question: is how do you avoid buying a flood damaged car? That's like the big question.
Yeah, and there's a lot of protection against that, and Carfax is really good at identifying those cars or identifying the cars that recently had a title change or a title replacement or something like that, and that's when you start to worry. But if the title is clean and it hasn't been changed, you're probably in good shape.
And then the other kind of questions that they have is how do insurers handle flooded cars? What's the basic thing there?
Yeah, it depends on the company. A lot of them have the cars destroyed. Some of them sell them for parts. And a few of them will allow the car to be sold again under a salvage title. And that's a big red flag. If you buy a car under a salvage title, apparently you know what you're going to do and you can fix a car and your expectations are low.
Okay. All right. And the other thing I wanted to mention was something that you wrote really quickly before we let you get out of here. You ready to lay down and take a nap while you're driving? Hands-free Haven, the Volvo 360C concept. Tell me about that.
The Volvo 360C concept is probably one of these things that we all know where this is going with autonomy anyway, and this is one of those things that's just a little bit frightening because it's suggesting that you may as well just take a nap. You can work longer and just sleep on your way home.
No.
And the concept is great looking because it's got this beautiful looking sort of first class seat bed in it, but I think the question ultimately becomes, why leave work? Just sleep in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I find that frightening, actually.
I do, too. A lot of this hands-free stuff freaks me out. You've driven cars that sort of correct themselves and stuff, and obviously you're compelled to grab the wheel when this happens.
Yeah, the Cadillac XT6 with Super Cruise, and that's available in the top two trim levels right now, is pretty close to autonomous. It has a lot of restrictions. You have to be paying attention to the road, but you can let go of the wheel. And it will call you back to the wheel if it's not on a road it has previously mapped or if it thinks the situation is too complex for the onboard system. But it is absolutely frightening to watch at first.
Yeah. I couldn't. I would totally freak out. There's just no question.
Yeah, no. We tested it on the Edens at like 4 PM and found it horrifying. But it worked. And it worked just fine. I mean, kudos to Cadillac. The Super Cruise system worked just fine.
Yeah.
But it's frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Edens at 4 PM is frightening anyway.
So. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. All right, Tom. It's always a pleasure. Publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Check out consumerguide.com and cgdailydrive.com for more information. A lot of the stories that we talked about are there, and a lot of things that that Tom has written are also there. And you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, have a great month, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, buddy. Okay, take care. There you go. Tom Appel, everybody. He'll be back with us next month. News is coming up in 8 seconds. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. And, that was, it's the first of two for Tuesday. Today's two for Tuesday. Yeah, me two for Tuesday. And it's one artist, two songs. Stephen and Margaret in Carbondale requested Elton John Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Steven requested Elton yesterday during the pet names conversation. And Dan, thank you for remembering. And there you go. So we got a little Elton John. So if Jim Toronto is listening, he's happy. Hey, what do you think? Has Jim spoken about the new trailer for the movie? Because they just debuted the teaser trailer for Rocket Man, in which the kid from The Kingsman movies is playing Elton John. So
I am checking his Facebook page. I'm not seeing anything.
No? Okay. All right. I'd be, of course, the first person that you would be most curious about you know, seeing that movie is Jim. There's no question about it. How many times has he seen? Do we know how many times he's seen Elton John? Is there a round figure?
I want to say 173.
173 times.
Right. He did go to, I think, Philadelphia, where this ending tour started for like three shows, I want to say.
For his tour. This is his final tour. Yes, Elton John. All right. It'd be interesting to see what people think of the movie. The movie comes out, I think it's next spring. It looks weird. Have you seen the trailer for it, Dan?
I have not.
Yeah, it looks really weird. Like he's floating at one point. There's, you know, I guess there's like musical numbers where people are flying around and stuff. So I think it's like it's his life through fantasy elements.
Mm.
At least that's what I could make out of the. It definitely doesn't look like a straight, you know, regular biopic.
Right.
It looks very stylistic and weird. So, which could be interesting. So. All right, Elton John, we'll get another one for two for Tuesday. So
179 he's at.
179 times he's seen. Jeez, that's a lot. That is a lot. All right. Hey, Airborne. Hey, Dan, did you have a Trapper Keeper?
I did for a short while.
Did you?
Yes.
And I don't think I ever had a Trapper Keeper. I had, like, you know, regular, like, sort of pocket folders and stuff, but I don't think I ever had a Trapper Keeper. Now, the Trapper Keeper was the thing, the special thing about that was the papers aren't going to fall out.
Right.
Because the thing is backwards. Like, the pockets are faced inward toward the spine of the folder.
Right.
And so that was the big thing about the Trapper Keeper. And they also had the Trapper Keeper, which was, like, the big Trapper Keeper, which had the Velcro thing that you would flip over and open.
Sure.
With the plastic covering. And you know, it was funny. There was a promo that we were playing for Cochran's show for the past. You know, we played it. I think we played it for like a week or so, or something, maybe a little bit more than that. And they were talking about how, you know, now kids have computers in school,
right?
And they never had a computer. And then Cochran said, "He said, you remember when they would debut another legal pad every 6 months and have a news conference about it." Which cracks me up.
That's a good line.
But that goes back to when I went to school. Now, Dan, you went to school a little bit. You went to school later than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys have computers in your school?
We did not. We were just outside of that. I should say not individually. There were computers in the in certain classrooms, only certain classrooms. But we were still pen and paper.
Yeah. And what about chalkboards? Were you dry erase at that point?
We did have mostly chalkboards, dry erase boards in the math classes, typically.
Okay.
But the majority were still blackboards with chalk.
That doesn't exist anywhere anymore, right?
No, it's typically not. They've got fancy things called whiteboards that are digital and...
Right, and they're computerized, right? So you can have images shown up there and all that stuff. It's not like the overhead projector.
Right.
Overhead projectors.
Right.
Where your hand is on top of it while you're writing. You know, the overhead projectors were always great. And then they would heat up.
Right.
Like they'd become hot. Smoke would come out of them sometimes.
We never had smoke, but.
We had a little smoke coming out a couple times. We had some faulty ones back in grade school. We had a few faulty overhead projectors. And so now what kind of stuff? Eileen's a teacher. What kind of equipment, what kind of stuff do they have at her level? Because she teaches, what grade does she teach? Fifth grade. Okay.
Fifth grade. So it is still, they do make them write pen and paper on certain things, but each student has basically has their own iPad or tablet that is assigned to them that they can do their homework reading and et cetera on. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That really is crazy, man.
Yeah. And that's becoming more of the standard throughout most school districts. So.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And you know, I just saw that terrible movie Night School.
Right.
And they had they took the test on a tablet, got the results on a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, I guess that's the norm now.
Right.
Because I've not been back to my school. The last time I was in my school was, it was like 2011 or something. And they had computers, you know, in every room and all that stuff. And it was a lot different than when I went to school. I mean, I graduated high school in 1983. And it was all pen, paper, and all that stuff. No computers. We did have computer classes, though. But this was when the computers weighed 500 pounds. and the floppy disks. We learned all about floppy disks.
Sure.
And, you know, it was just the prompt was a black and, you know, the black and white screen with the flashing prompt, and you have to type in 14,000 letters and numbers in order to do anything. That was the very first computer classes that I ever took. Those were back in the old days. But the history of the Trapper Keeper, this is pretty interesting. In the fall of 1981, second grader Mike Ryan was walking through the halls of his new school when he realized something terrible. He was the only kid without a Trapper Keeper. I'm sure there were others, he says, but I certainly didn't notice them because they weren't worth noticing because they didn't have a Trapper Keeper. After school, he told his parents his tale of woe, and his father picked one up, but it was the wrong thing. It was a ripoff made of what appeared to be denim. To Ryan's horror, everyone noticed Trapper Keeper that looks more like a Trapper Jeansper, one kid sneered. There were knockoffs? There were Trapper Keeper knockoffs. Wow, I guess I wasn't aware of that. So, listen, by the way, here's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you went to school back in the day, what were your school supplies? And did you get the school supplies like every year, like in late August? Did you go shopping? Did you get your school supplies? Everybody did. But what were your mainstays? If you had the Trapper Keeper, you had your Bic pens or pencils or whatever. I've got here 12 vintage school supplies that you can still buy. You can still buy these school supplies, even though they're not nearly as needed now because of all the technology and what's going on in the schools. But, I didn't have a Trapper Keeper. So I'm not really sure. I know it was a very, very popular thing. It was launched in 1978 by the Meade Corporation. Trapper Keeper notebooks are brightly colored three-ring binders that hold folders called trappers and close with a flap. From the start, they were an enormous success. For several years after their nationwide release, Meade sold over $100 million worth of folders in notebooks and notebooks a year. To date, some 75 million Trapper Keepers have flown off the shelves. The Trapper Keeper is one of the most recognized school brands of all time. Jessica Hodges, director of school marketing for Echo Brands. It's also a prominent pop culture touchstone. Trapper Keepers have been featured on Family Guy, Dawson's Creek, South Park, Full House, Stranger Things, and Napoleon Dynamite. There were transformed into a Trivial Pursuit game piece. John Mayer called Trapper Keepers the genesis of OCD for my generation. That's pretty funny. These organizational devices would come to define childhoods across North America, and adults who had them remember their Trapper Keepers fondly. Do people really remember their Trapper Keepers fondly?
I think people who were organized, people who had OCD do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And those who didn't have them often remember exactly which one they wanted. Joshua Furlinger at Engadget called it the greatest three-ring binder ever created. Trapper Keepers, the way they all combined all of one desktop tools, were an early incarnation of the smartphone. There is robust business in vintage Trapper Keepers on eBay, where unused binders can go for $50 or more. Oh, my God. Dan, can you check eBay? Wow. People are going to eBay to get Trapper Keepers. $50 for an unused binder? But in the late 70s, the people at Meade couldn't have known that their product would eventually garner such cultural significance. In fact, Trapper Keeper inventor E. Bryant Crutchfield, that's a great name right there, E. Bryant Crutchfield, was just looking for the next back-to-school item, and he did it the old-fashioned way through market research. The Trapper Keeper was no accident, he tells Mental Floss. It was the most scientific and pragmatically planned product ever in that industry. So he did a lot of studying, and he did a lot of analysis before he invented the Trapper Keeper, that good old E. Bryant Crutchfield.
The highest one I have is $55. It's a Nike one with a like plush cover, like it's a purple plush cover. There's one going for $45 that's got a shark on a lifeguard's chair looking out over the ocean.
Wow.
And then a $43 one of the John Maggard fighter plane Trapper Keeper.
Wow.
Which is a fighter plane taking off from the battleship.
Okay. 55, 45, they're all going right there. Get your Trapper Keepers.
The other ones are in the $25 to $35 range.
That's really crazy. That is, what did they cost when they were in the store? $5 maybe? In the, you know, when
that's
they
a
were,
good question. I don't know.
When they first were released back then, maybe $4 or $5? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you fondly remember your Trapper Keeper, or perhaps you have some Trapper Keepers that you kept, 312-981-7200. And what kind of school supplies did you buy? And what's it like now to shop for school supplies for kids? You just get them a tablet, right? Or and that's basically it. Let's see. Of course, anything as popular as the Trapper Keeper will almost inevitably face a backlash. But in this case, the backlash didn't come from students. Crutchfield remembers that some teachers complained about the multiplication and conversion tables, which they said it could help students cheat. It was a controversy at one time, he says. One teacher said, "Hell, we can take the portfolios away while they're doing their tests." But most teachers were very honest and said, "Anything that helps me pound it into their head is good." Yeah, I forgot about all the conversion stuff. I totally forgot about all that. What else did they have on the inside of those things? I know, did they have multiplication tables or conversion tables? They have like a ruler, that kind of thing.
I remember the ruler. I don't remember much else.
You mentioned Trapper Keepers to your friends, and you'll inevitably hear about someone who desperately wanted one but couldn't have it because it was banned in their school. The Trapper Keeper started to show up on some class lists as a do not purchase because teachers don't like the noise of Velcro, so we switched from Velcro to make it a snap. Some teachers don't like the sound of Velcro? What? Was it Jerry Seinfeld's dad? In some cases, what the binders that school were calling Trapper Keepers and banning weren't actually Trapper Keepers. Our research has shown that what they were calling Trapper Keepers are actually those big sewn binders that are 3 to 4 inches thick and can't fit into a small school desk. The reason they're on the list when you show the teachers a real Trapper Keeper, that's the reason they're on the list. But when you show the teachers a real Trapper Keeper, they're a very slim 1-inch ring fixture. And it's like, oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I don't have a problem with this at all. They became less popular in the mid-90s. The Trapper Keeper has remained an important part of Mead's back-to-school line of products. They've undergone some modifications as well. So, 312-981-7200. We're talking about back-to-school items. And we got a couple of texts here. 773 area code says, "My kids wanted a Chandler calendar book." Oh, I know the black, those are black, right? The little black calendar. Yeah, everybody, people have those, right?
Right.
We don't have them anymore because we have a phone. Because you got calendars in your phone that you can just put whatever is going to happen in your phone. But I used to have those. I had a Chandler calendar book. Kids wanted those? I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, did you have to have a one of those calendar books for high school? That was a required item.
I think so. I didn't pay attention a lot when I was in high school.
Well, that's why they made you get it, so you'd have to write down the homework assignment for each class.
Exactly. How about this 708 area code says 64 count Crayola with sharpener. Yeah, those were good. Those were cool, man, with the sharpener. And didn't we discuss this before that you guys, everybody else, like Esmeralda, you guys never had the sharpener?
That is correct.
Man, you missed out.
I did.
You missed out on the big box of Crayolas with the big sharpener built in right into the box. That's cool stuff, man. All right. Yeah, I'm trying to remember now if we had a calendar. If we had calendars. You know, Brett Kavanaugh did. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Quite famous one these days.
All right. I've got some vintage school supplies here that you can still buy, and we can talk about how schools were different in the 1800s. Well, not even the 1800s, you know, in the 20th century, actually, how different it was, like when I went to school or we went to school, as opposed to what's happening in schools now. So let's reminisce a little bit about the old days of going to school and some of your school supplies and your favorite things. 312-981-7200. Does anybody remember their textbooks? I'm trying to remember. I can't remember a single textbook that I had that were the name of it. I remember I had a class called Man and His World. That was the name of the class, and it was Mr. Weeman was the teacher. Mm. Tom Weeman, who would go on to be dean and then principal of Luther North. I love that guy. Weeman and I didn't get along really well because I was such a screw up. But I would always I would goof around in his class constantly, and he would, you know, like most normal teachers, he would get a little bit sick of it because I'd just be screwing around. But every day I would crack him up at least once. He couldn't not laugh at some of the stuff that I did. It would make him angry. It would make him angry that I entertained him while you know, disrupting the class. So anyway, would you guys, anybody remember their textbooks? 312-981-7200. In Man and His World, we had a very specific, it was a history, kind of a history class, but it was called Man and His World. And I remember I really dug the book that we had for that class. I don't remember what it was called. I mean, do we have any Luther alumni out there who had Man and His World? And maybe has the textbook? Did you save any of your textbooks, Dan? Do you have any of them?
I do have an anatomy and a physiology book that I had for AP biology. That was pretty interesting, but that's the only one. I think I've got like a few other ones littered around my parents' house, but that's the only one I remember purposely hanging on to.
Has anybody got any old textbooks? Bust them out. 312-981-7200. All right, let's take a break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk more school stuff. That's our second song in the twofer. And it's Steve and Margaret, and Margaret and Carpendale, requesting some Elton John. That's I'm Still Standing on Two for Tuesday. Give me Two for Tuesday. You can get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So talking about the subject of back to school and reminiscing about some of the cool stuff that we enjoyed when we were in school. And went through the history of Trapper Keepers and talked a little bit about that and how they're going for up to $55 on eBay for a vintage unused Trapper Keeper. And it seems to be everybody's favorite school supply. And we're talking about that. And wonder if you guys still have maybe some of your textbooks, if you remember some of those. I love talking about, I love reminiscing. That's one of the things I love doing on this show, is talking about stuff and remembering stuff from the past. And school is certainly something that, you know, touched all of us. And we remember very specific things. And that's what we want to hear. 312-981-7200. Here is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hi. I remember going out and getting these compasses and protractors.
That's right.
And I was a remedial math, so the only thing I used them for was beating up the other kids with.
Right. You know, the protractor was dangerous because you could stab somebody with the with the sharp end of it. The protractor was
the one that had the circles.
Right. The protractor was the half moon thing. That was the protractor.
Right.
Right. Okay. I'm getting them confused.
You make a fist with that and punch kids.
Right. There you go. See, David grew up like me, Dan, smacking my friends around,
yep.
Beating each other up. That's what you did.
When he called it initially, I'm like, well, this is right up Nick's alley.
Yeah. The old protractor and compass. Do they still have to get those nowadays, Dan? That's all computerized now, right?
I don't know, because that requires some manual
math. And,
right. So, I mean, I don't really know that you can replicate that necessarily as well in a computer form.
Yeah. All right. Hey, David, thanks for the call.
I didn't need them until high school, but I've been getting them since I was in grade school.
Yeah. All right, David, thanks, man. Take care. There you go. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up and then more school talk here, protractors and compasses. And Yeah. Okay. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Tuesday morning and two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. And Alan in North Carolina says Pat Metheny. That's Ozark, which is an instrumental. And that'll be the first of two songs we hear on this morning's Two for Tuesday. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're reminiscing about going to school, good old school days, and talking about some of our favorite school supplies and things that we had at school. Maybe you guys got some textbooks laying around that you can remember. We were just talking about the history of the Trapper Keepers. And, you know, you can get a Trapper Keeper for $55 on eBay. And we got some texts coming in. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I also have some vintage school supplies that you can still buy. Don't really need them now. School supply shopping for back to school supplies is a lot different than it was when I was a kid, when I was going to school. That's for sure. Garbage Truck Rich says, for me, the puffy stickers you use to put on the Trapper Keeper was better than the Keeper. Oh, yeah, they did cover them in stickers, didn't they? They had the big puffy stickers that people would put all over the butterflies and stuff.
I remember, speaking of stickers, I threw a hissy fit for some reason back when I was in grade school about these stickers that they were selling around Halloween time that were like playful spiders and witches and things like that, but like it would be just like the spider body, and then you could switch like the witch's legs and put them on the spider body and things like this, and they were just stickers that you can reuse in different ways and things like that. And for some reason I needed to put them on my denim jacket or the world was going to come to an end. And like, they were at the local Jewel Osco, which was down the street, and I begged and pleaded and got angry when I didn't get them. And eventually I got them, and, you know, like, these legs are nothing. They're like centimeters long, so they naturally fell off within like two minutes of me wearing my jacket.
Right.
But for some reason, I remember you vividly needing those stickers.
On your denim jacket.
On my denim jacket.
Man, oh, man. That's cool. That's awesome. That's pretty funny. 608 area code says, my son got the Swiss Army Trapper Keeper at Staples. It's way cool, and that was in 2013. What's the Swiss Army Trapper Keeper? Does it have knives and stuff and scissors and a corkscrew? What are we talking about here? 773 area code says, my kid's school supplies list says no Trapper Keepers. Oh, so you can't have the Trapper Keeper. This is school that says, and he says, P.S. Boy. That, by the way, is a reference to Phantasm. That's what the tall man says to Mike. Boy. Phantasm, by the way, tonight. Screening it tonight. Dan, did you know what boy meant with all the exclamation points?
I thought it was Flavor Flav.
No, it's Phantasm. I mean, at any other time during the year, it would be Flavor Flav. But since tonight I'm screening Phantasm, I think it's a reference to Phantasm. I'm safely saying it's a reference to Phantasm. By the way, AMCtheaters.com, reserve your tickets now. One of the greatest horror movies ever, 4K, digital remastered. It's spectacular. I'll introduce it. Starts at 8. We'll talk about it afterwards. And, so Phantasm tonight, AMC Rosemont 18. Go to AMCtheaters.com and reserve your seats now. 765 area code said, my list included the yellow school box, yellow 2 pencils, number 2 pencils, 12-inch ruler, protractor, compass, yellow ruled paper, Elmer's glue, paste, coloring pencils, construction paper, and I bought all of my supplies at the school office. Oh, you bought them right at the school. Okay. Yeah, we had the, obviously, the number 2 pencils and the protractor and the ruler, all that stuff we had to have. Elmer's glue and paste. Yeah. Yep, especially grade school. And then you had the kid that would eat the paste. Yeah, you have a kid in your grade school that ate paste?
I seem to recall, yes.
We used to also take the Elmer's glue and put it on our hand and
sure,
then let it dry and then peel it off. We had a lot of fun in those days. Here's Ron on WGN. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Nick, what's up?
How you doing?
Good. I just wanted to, I listened to DM last, and I went to Gordon Tech High School back in the mid-70s, and that was all boys' school at that point.
Yep.
Right on the block from Lane, and we had a teacher called Mr. Lasaki. He was an English teacher, but he had no chin, so it was basically his bottom lip down was like the neck of a turkey. And the sweetest guy in the world, you know, he put up a lot of garbage from us. But, you know, he'd walk up and down the aisles talking, and you'd hear the turkey calls as he passed.
Oh, man.
And we had a brother, because there's a lot of brothers there, and that's all they used to do is drink beer during the night and work out during the day. And his name was Brother Frank, and his nickname was Bro Frank. And he ran the cafeteria and the prayers. And just use your imagination. You know, you get cat calls, bro, and another word to go next to it.
Yeah.
He would pick somebody out of the cafeteria. It was either me or a couple of my other buddies. and he'd have that panel with all the holes drilled in it.
Oh, yeah.
And grab you by sideburns, hold you, and then bend you over and give you a couple loving smacks.
Yep. Yep. A lot of my friends went to Catholic high school, and so did Dan. Dan went to Catholic high school, all boys. And there's some physical stuff that would happen in these schools that didn't happen. I went to public school. We get away with anything in public school back then, at least.
Yeah, I just listened to it. It brings back some memories.
It does.
Driving in my caller just laughing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool, Ron. Thanks for the call.
All right. No problem.
He's got some school memories for us right there. Did you guys did some of the teachers? You had brothers in your school?
We did have brothers in
at
our school.
At St. Pat's, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. There was only three or four left by the time I got there.
Yeah,
though.
And he had the robe. They did the robe and the whole nine?
Not a robe,
no.
but a black frock. Yeah. Basically, a priest, all black except without the collar.
Oh, okay. Did they get a little physical?
No, they were okay. They're the other ones. There were other ones who got physical and taped kids to desks and things like that.
Yeah.
But not the brothers.
No. What's the thing called when you have to hold the books up?
Crucifixion book hang.
Crucifixion book?
Yeah, crucifixion book hang.
Okay. And I the only reason I know about that is because of the movie Heaven Help Us.
Yeah.
I've mentioned it before. And that movie, I saw that movie. That movie takes place in the 60s. So I'm sure it was even more, there was more physical stuff going on then.
Sure.
And it takes place in a private Catholic boys' high school. With brothers, and there was a particularly sadistic guy, a character in the movie, who would beat the crap out of the kids. And I saw that movie with my friends who all went to Catholic school. All went to Catholic school, and afterwards they're like, yeah. And some people said the nuns were even worse. Nuns would be even worse. Smack you with the ruler, do that kind of stuff on your knuckles, that kind of thing. But Kevin Dillon is in Heaven Help Us, and he's the guy that's got to do the hold the books up.
Oh, that's
yeah. So, all right. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How you doing tonight?
All right. What's up?
Well, I remember we had to get a slide rule when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I never could figure out how to use it. But you remember my guidance counselor and my
right
57 Chevy.
Right.
He showed me how that made a real good tool for finding top dead center on a piston. Slide that arm out, slide it down the piston, down the spark plug hole, and when it finally stops coming up, that tells you when you're at top dead center and how you could use it to measure out lines, instead of measuring them out, you'd put the non-sliding end where it needed to go, and then you'd extend it out. Well, then you just laid your line out against that extended line and cut them, so.
There you go. It was useful in some way.
Yeah, I never could do math on it, but it sure helped me find top dead center and how to make brake lines.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. There you go.
Right.
Use it for your purpose. All right, Rich. All right. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Take care.
Yep. Bye.
Dan, did you guys have drafting class in school?
We did not.
We had drafting. And
coincidentally, one of our techs marked the red man going to Lane Tech in the 80s. We had to purchase a giant drafting board, a pain to take home on the bus.
We didn't have to purchase drafting boards. They had drafting boards. We had to get a T-square. We had to get a T-square. I remember having to get a T-square for my drafting class. So I went to school with a guy that we nicknamed. His name was Eric, but we nicknamed him Romero because there's a character in Escape from New York who's named Romero, and he's named after, the reason why he's named Romero is because Carpenter was friends with George Romero, so he named the character Romero. But he had crazy hair that stuck up. Have you seen Escape from New York?
I have not.
Okay. He's got crazy hair that just sticks up like crazy. So Eric had hair that would poof up. So we started calling because Escape from New York came out right when we were in high school. We were I was a junior in high school when it came out, or a sophomore. So from that point on, he was Romero. Well, Romero had this habit of framing people. This was what his thing was. He was not a very intelligent guy. Wasn't a really great student, but he was fantastic at pranks and framing people, fantastic at it. So, for instance, there was a teacher that she notably wore a really bad wig, and it was obvious to everybody, and so So she, you know, like we would be in the cafeteria, and they had teachers assigned to watch the cafeteria, to walk through the cafeteria to make sure nobody's fighting or throwing food or any of that kind of stuff, just to supervise. And they would, you know, have different shifts in there. So the teacher, and I can't remember the teacher's name, but the teacher who had the bad wig was supervising the cafeteria at the time. And so we were in, I spent a lot of time in the cafeteria. I spent more time hanging out in the cafeteria than in the classroom when I went to high school. So I'm sitting there with Romero and like my other buddies that we were all part of this, you know, the goofy idiot clique, as we called. And we're sitting there, and she walks by, and Romero grabs, you know, like slaps another guy who's sitting next to him, slaps him on the shoulder and says, "What do you mean she wears a wig?" And that's what he, that was his MO. He did that all the time, did it all the time, and in some cases hurt himself to pull off a frame job. So he did it to me. He did it to me a few times, but this was the most insane one, because we were in drafting class. And for people who don't know, in drafting class, you like a chair I'm sitting on now. This chair is really high because we have standing consoles here now. So we have these chairs that go up and really, and I'm sitting up pretty high. So at a drafting table, the drafting table is up high. You're sitting on an elevated chair. And, you know, you got your papers out, and you know, you would have like a compass, and you know, and you got your T-square and all that stuff. So Romero, his drafting desk was right next to the pencil sharpener. So so I walk up to sharpen my pencil, and he's got all of his stuff out. He's got the T-square on there. He's got pages and papers and pencils and compass, all that stuff. And so he goes, "Hey. Hey, Nick." And I go, "What?" And he used to talk like this. He had like a deep voice, and he would talk like this. "Oh, no." He would say stuff like that. "I'm going to drive." He used to have a Pinto. "I'm going to drive my Pinto." So that, no, and this is another thing he did. He said, I'm not making this up. We were in a car one time, and he's like, "I'm hungry. Let's go to there. Peeps Tacos." And we're like, "No, that's Pepe's." Not Peeps, it's Peppies. So anyway, he's at the drafting desk, elevated up, got all of his stuff there, compasses and put and all that. And he walks, and I walk over to sharpen my pencil, and he goes, "Hey, Nick, feel to see if my T-square is level." I go, "What?" And I'm standing on the other side of the desk. And so he goes, "Just feel to see if my T-square is level. I think I might be having some problems with my T-square." So I go, "All right." So I reach over, you know, the back of the desk. I reach over to touch his T-square. He grabs everything off of the top of the desk and flings himself backwards and falls. The T-square goes flying. A compass goes flying. Everybody is startled. The teacher looks up. My arm is extended where it looks exactly like I pushed him off the thing. And Romero's laying on his back going, "Why did you push me?" This is what this guy did. He did it. He regularly did that. He was great at it. And wow. I ended up getting a detention.
Sure.
I said, and I couldn't even say anything. Like, I'm like, I didn't put, but I'm standing there with my hand as though it looks like I just knocked him.
Right.
And he really took a spill. I mean, he did it.
Yeah. I mean, if it's an elevated chair.
Yeah. He went back and he knocked everything on top of. He could have been stabbed with the compass. That's how dedicated Romero was to pranking people and framing them up. And he did a good job. And I actually congratulated him. I'm like, "Good job, dude. That was good." So that's the only experience I had with a T-square that meant anything. So, and what an idiot I am. You know, like, "Check to see if my T-square is level." He did it to another guy. This is another quick one. Just because he did it to this guy named Grabowski, okay? And we're in the class together, and the teacher was this woman who was just really, really strict. And she would love to read. I can't even remember what class she taught, but she would read Russian literature to us. And we'd be like, "What the hell is going on?" So anyway, we're in class, and Grabowski's sitting across the aisle from Romero. And so he asks Grabowski to reach over and touch the page. He's, "Feel my page," because his book, he was opening it. He had his book. "Feel my page." And so Grabowski reaches over, and he goes, and he screams out, "Hey, Grabowski!" And the teacher looks up, and Romero had drawn on his arm, like, because, you know, he had a pen, he drew on his arm. And so the teacher looked up and saw, you know, Grabowski. "He's trying to draw on my arm." he says to the teacher. Grabowski's like, what are you talking about? And then it's really silent. And she's like, just get back to work. So Grabowski's like mad. He's like, come on, man, what are you doing? So Romero takes the pen and inks up his entire arm, like just goes nuts. Like it puts ink marks all over his arm. And then he goes, Grabowski, quit playing games. And the teacher looked up and he's like rubbing his arm like it hurts. Like Grabowski got a detention for drawing all over Romero's arm. I don't know. That was his specialty.
That is quite amazing.
Grabowski, quit playing games. Okay, we have to break here. And when we come back, we got more childhood memories and school memories and all kinds of crazy stuff here. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. And it's 2 for Tuesday. Alan in North Carolina requesting Pat Metheny, and that is Autumn. Because it is Autumn. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. And also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGNRadio.com. All right. By the way, people were texting in what happened to Romero after high school. He's no longer with us. Romero passed away. He got ill and he passed away. It's a sad story, but he died too young, much too young. But he gave us years worth of memories from all the pranks that he pulled and the stuff that he did. Anyway, we got a ton of texts that are coming in. We are talking about school supplies, school memories, textbooks, things that you remember from your school days. 312-981-7200. 847 area code said, the only book I ever read from cover to cover was Mo Howard and the Three Stooges. Everything else was covered with cliff notes. they have a different one now, right? It's not Cliff's Notes anymore. It's something else notes.
Spark Notes is the Cliff Notes that are online.
That's the one, Spark Notes, yeah. And we had Cliff Notes. I did the old B-colored Cliff's Notes. Canadian Bill said we had the usual things, pencil, pens, binders, and, of course, the math kit. I was in school in the mid-70s, and I took a computer course. The only problem was there was only one computer in the town that we lived in. One time we had a class trip just to see the computer. Needless to say, it was huge. It's like the Whopper in War Games.
I couldn't tell if he meant physically large or the fact that they got to see it was.
Needless to say, it was huge. To go on a that makes sense. The class trip was a big deal. I would imagine the computer by today's standards was huge.
It's both.
It works both ways. Yeah. 773 area code said we had an oil cloth for the desktop, book covers, and a pencil bag. You ever have book covers on your? Did you put book covers on your?
They were sponsored book covers. Coincidentally enough, coming up on the opening bell, we had the local funeral home.
Really?
Yeah.
Which funeral home?
It's the one at Lawrence in Austin because I went.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know exactly what.
They sponsored it. So
that's funny, yeah, man. That's funny.
They had blue and white and that very odd plasticky material.
Oh, man. We had covers. I think we had covers in grade school. In high school, I don't even know what the hell was going on. I don't know. But we didn't have any. We certainly didn't have anything, sponsored. I guess that's a thing. That's definitely a thing. Let's see. 847 area code says, I remember before Xerox, we would get mimeographed copies that you would sniff because you could smell the chemicals that was used in the machine and the purple print. I also remember using mimeograph when I taught in the 70s. Yeah, we had mimeograph. Vroom, vroom, vroom. You spin it around. They do a bit like that in Fast Times. You guys remember the scene in Fast Times? They pass out a test, and every single character in the classroom lifts it up to their nose and smells it. You did that, and sometimes it would be damp. Like if the teacher just finished mimeographing the test or the paper, it would be damp, and it would smell fantastic. 847 area code. Does anyone remember a notebook called Nifty? It was shaped like the typing book. They came in different colors and held your paper. I don't remember a notebook called Nifty. Dan, do you remember a notebook called Nifty?
I do not.
312 area code says, I still have my 8th grade graduation autograph books, also the textbook Classic Journalism. I have my 8th grade autograph book, too.
And I do as well.
And I have all 4 of my yearbooks, which has some you know, which says some serious blackmail pictures in them right there. let's see. 312 area code says Chicago Public School in the 60s in Chicago Public. Oh, I think I just sneezed.
So tight. Hopefully, if it all works out, I will. I've got a picture of you when you were in grade school that will include with the podcast. You're wearing a lovely purple velour shirt.
Really?
Yes. I'll see if I can post
it on
the Facebook.
It's from high school?
Grade school.
Grade school. Where did you get it?
I think Andy got it from your mom.
Oh, okay. So it goes back that far.
Yeah.
Okay. In Chicago Public High School in the 60s, a boys' swim class was in the nude, no lie. Well, we've talked about that before. My dad swam in the nude as well. We've all tried to figure out what the use of that was. Dan, you had to wear a Speedo.
I did have to wear a Speedo.
Yep. My friends who went to Pats, nude. Had to swim nude. 773 area code says, we had to get paint for art, both liquid and dry. All right. For your art class. Cool. All right, everybody hang on because we have to break for the news. And then I've got some more vintage school supplies that you can buy and share some more of your school memories from the past. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for school supplies, school memories, textbooks, all of that stuff. And also 2 for Tuesday. Don't forget about that. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah. So there you go. Let's break. The news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. And Michael in Iowa requesting Cher, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme from her new album. That's an ABBA song.
Yeah, that's definitely a sample, right?
Yeah. Is she doing ABBA covers because she was in Mamma Mia 9? Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And we're back in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. On a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. All right. So we've been talking about some school memories and stuff and your favorite supplies, the old Trapper Keeper, if everybody had the old Trapper Keeper and some of the other things. But I have some vintage school supplies that you can still buy if you're still interested. I don't know what you're going to do with them because your kids don't need them anymore, really. So here we go. You can still get Trapper Keepers, as we were talking about earlier. In the 80s and 90s, the Trapper Keeper was more than just a school supply. It was a status symbol. The unchallenged MVP of school supplies has recently made a comeback, and you can buy regular binders, outfit your tablet with a Trapper Keeper-inspired cover, or buy a vintage model on eBay. Oh, so you can make your tablet look like a Trapper Keeper. That's pretty cool. Wonder if people are doing that. You can be modern and non-modern at the same time by making your modern tablet look like a non-modern Trapper Keeper. Next is Lisa Frank goodies. Back in the day, girls had to have anything and everything Lisa Frank. Stickers, folders, notebooks, and yes, Trapper Keepers. What's that? I don't know because, one, I'm not a girl. Girls had to have everything and anything Lisa Frank. They had stickers, folders, notebooks, and Trapper Keepers.
It was very, like a lot of rainbow colors and a lot of exaggerated dogs and turtles and things like that. You might recognize it if you saw it.
Was she a designer? Lisa Frank a designer?
Lisa Frank is a designer.
Okay. All right. So it's the Lisa Frank designed those things. Okay. And they were very popular. How about Yikes pencils? I do not remember Yikes pencils. Y-I-K-E-S, Yikes pencils. These pencils were so much better than your typical number two. They had personality coming in many different shapes and patterns. As the 1993 commercial points out, you can't look sharp with dull pencils. Can you find that commercial, Dan? 1993 commercial for Yikes pencils. They're not made anymore, but you can still find Yikes pencils on eBay. There's sure to be some conversation starters around the office. I don't know. I don't even know, Michael. But I mean, I was out of school by 1993. I wasn't in school anymore, so that's probably why I don't know what Yikes pencils are. But they had different shapes and patterns.
Hey, dude. It's not your clothes you need to change. It's your pencils. Yikes are the only pencils as unique as you. Yikes are pencils and erasers with outrageous shapes and colors that go straight to the core. Because you can't look sharp with dull pencils.
Sorry, Dad. Yikes can't work miracles.
They write like other pencils, but they make you go, yikes!
What? They write like other pencils, but they make you go, yikes! What do they look like?
Like crazy shapes and colors, like the erasers would sometimes be like triangles or rectangles instead of the usual circle, and then the pencil itself had squiggly lines on it or
wow dots. I don't remember. Do you remember that?
I do not.
Don't remember yikes pencils at all. Eraser Mate pens. Oh god, I remember these. It took Paper Mate more than a decade to develop the erasable ink used in Eraser Mate pens, which hit the U.S. market in 1979. The thrill of being able to write in pen and erase it if you make a mistake was undeniable when you were a kid. I remember those Eraser Mate pens. And I must have got them right because it said it hit the U.S. market in 79. That's probably when I got them. I got them the same year. And I remember that just the ink. Well, I'm left-handed, so that's an issue with the Eraser Mate pen, because the side of my hand below my pinky would rub against the page and smear the erasable ink. I remember the erasable ink thing being a nightmare, just because I'm lefty, and I just remember the ink not being great. There was a reason why it was erasable. It wasn't very good ink. Dan, did you have Eraser Mate pens?
I did. I loved them. As a righty, I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. No, it was cool. I'm not saying it's not cool, because when you can erase ink, the first time you do it, you go, ooh. Ooh. How about this? Mr. Sketch scented markers. These markers, which debuted in the mid-60s, were on every kid's back-to-school wish list. And not because they were good for coloring, not just because they were good for coloring. Sniffing these scented markers was a favorite activity, and every kid had their favorite marker, too. Though these markers were off the market for a while, they've recently been reintroduced. Pick up some and use them to give your memos a little something extra. I remember smelling markers. I mean, not huffing markers, but like, you know. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but those were pretty cool. And I think if I remember correctly, they came in like different scents, like flavors or whatever. You know, like I think each color had a different smell that would correspond with something that would smell like that color. I think like maybe the yellow smelled like banana. The orange smelled like orange. In red, maybe smelled like cherry or strawberry or something like that. But I don't remember the name specifically. Did Mr. Sketch wasn't the only company that made scented markers?
No, I'm sure not.
No. I don't remember it being a must for me to have them to get back to school, though. I don't think that was on my list. Like, I have to have Mr. Sketch's scented markers. How about this Jelly Roll pens? It's not is it jelly, but with a G?
I believe it's jelly.
Jelly with a G. Jelly Roll pens. The Sakura Color Products released their ball sign pens. They're the first pens to use gel ink. Oh, that's why it's gel, as in jelly, as in gel. In Japan in 1984, when they brought the pens to the U.S. in 1989, the company changed its product's name to Jelly Roll, and the pens became a staple on mid-90s back-to-school lists. What are those? What's so special about that? What's so special about gel ink? G-E-L, gel ink.
I think much like the erasable pen ink, it was kind of smudgy, and it came out like as like an ooze. So like if you were writing your name, it would have the texture feel of a kind of a gel.
Huh. Okay. The company began trying to create a gel ink formula that they could use, that they used in the early 80s. Jelly Roll pens. Don't see that. Again, this was popular in the mid-90s, and I was not in school in the mid-90s, so this is something that I missed out on. So, and of course, pencil grips. These grips were supposed to adjust a child's grasp so he or she wrote the right way. They came in so many cool shapes and colors that they made plain old pencils a lot more fun. Pencil grips. Dan, do you remember pencil grips?
Oh, yeah. They were, like, mandatory in our school.
Really?
Yeah.
Why can't I... What are they... Do they go around the pencil?
Yeah, and they would be like a rubber triangle with a hole in the middle, and then you'd rest your
index finger on. Oh, okay. All right. Now I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. So you use them then when you were in school?
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I don't think I ever used them, but, yeah. A lot of texts coming in. We're talking about school memories here. And some school supplies that you can get now. Everything that I'm talking about, these vintage school supplies, you can get them. Maybe you got to go to eBay, spend a little money for them. 312 area code said, we had to make book covers for the new books from brown paper bags. It was done as a whole class project. You know what? I had to do that. Now I totally remember we had to do that in grade school.
That was awesome. I was so impressed with people who had those, because I could never figure out how to do it, and
yeah.
I end up with the plastic ones that I didn't like.
You'd end up with the funeral home one. I remember now that we would do that with the, and some people would decorate them, you know, like draw pictures on them and stuff, and they were made from a brown paper bag. I totally remember that now. 773 area code says that we made book covers from the Sunday comics in the newspaper, and from aluminum foil. Oh, yeah, man, now all this is coming back to me now. Kids would cover their books in aluminum foil. I totally forgot that. And the Sunday comics. I totally forgot all of this stuff. Canadian Bill says the computer was physically huge. It filled two rooms huge. Wow. So it was like the Whopper in War Games. 847 area code says, in the 1940s, there were inkwell holders located at the top of the desk. Girls with long braids would have their hair dipped in the ink by the person sitting behind them. Yeah. If Romero lived in the 40s, he would have done this. Yes, he would have. Why is your hair in the ink? That's hilarious. That's really hilarious. And, another reason why it's difficult to be left-handed. All of the inkwells were on the right side. Just saying. You know. Yeah, and I'm old enough to have gone to school where they still had old desks that had the inkwell hole in them.
We did as well.
Did you? Because, if a desk lasts 50 years, let it last 50 years. Yeah. And I remember not knowing why it had, and people had to explain, teachers had to explain to us what it was, because I'm like, why is there a hole in the desk? That's where the inkwells used to go. Now, get that pen out of your left hand, demon. All right. Let's take a break here, and we're sharing a bunch of school memories. Got a lot of texts coming in. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, and I still have some vintage school supplies that you can get that are available. And now so many memories come rushing back. I'll tell you that the brown paper bag thing, like, boom, it unlocked a huge memory for me that I had completely forgotten. Wow. All right. Two for Tuesday continues. 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. Michael in Iowa, Cher. It's The Winner Takes It All. Clearly she's doing ABBA songs on this album. So there it is. In honor of her appearance in Mamma Mia. Here we go again. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here, 312-981-7200, talk, text, 2 for Tuesday requests. We are talking about school memories and school supplies and books and all kinds of cool stuff, getting a ton of texts. Is this my dad? My dad? Hey, Dad.
Hi, Nick.
What are you doing up, man?
I went to bed at 8 o'clock.
Oh. All right. Hey, Dad, I'll...
My memory is LePage Glue.
LePage?
It was a bottle, and it had a plastic cap, or it was rubber or something, but they had a slit in it, and
then
you would just slide it across the paper.
I remember that, too, and it was orange, right? The
orange, yeah. They got quite a history on them. I Googled it.
Yeah?
lot of pictures. Big history for that company.
Yeah, and it was what's the
kid? That's my oldest.
What's the name of the What's the name of the company again?
LePage. LePage.
Yeah, I totally remember that glue. Absolutely remember.
Yeah,
yeah. We used to have it in the house.
Yeah.
I remember we had it in the house, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So cool. That's,
All right,
man.
Hey, Mr. DiGilio, I actually have a question for you. I know you were a pen connoisseur. Did that start in school for you, or is that something you developed later in life?
Later in life, yeah.
He's got 1,000 pens.
When I was
pens.
At work, when I, you know, at work, I used to collect pens. People would send me pens. You know.
It's a thing now. If you look at the desk that my dad sits at where the computer is, there are like literally hundreds of pens, of different kinds of crazy pens.
I got about 700 of them.
He's not,
not exaggerating.
He said he collects pens.
The latest one I got was a pen from Hawaii where hang loose, you know, where the sign.
It's got the sign, the hang loose sign on it. That's very cool. All right. Hey, Dad, I know, you know, I'm going to thank you for coming to see Phantasm tonight, despite the fact that we're going to miss the Cub game.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love Phantasm. That was a great movie.
I know you love it, man. We're going to get to see it.
It was a different movie. It was very different.
It certainly was. But yeah,
anyway.
But I'm going to give people updates on the score and stuff before the movie starts, and then right after, before I start talking, we'll get a score update as well.
Great.
Okay. I'll see you tonight.
Yeah,
I'll see you tonight, Dad. Okay, buddy.
All right. Take care, buddy.
There you go. Bye. You're my dad's biggest Cub fan in the world, and yet he's coming to see Phantasm tonight. Yeah, it was a different kind of movie. Yeah, Dad. I vividly remember the first. My dad took me to see it. Me and my friend Dan Long went to go see it, and I believe Andy Mueller went with us too. And Woods Theater downtown in the Loop, the Woods Theater, and I lost my mind. I just lost my mind when I saw it. So, all right, there's my dad talking about glue. I remember that glue. I absolutely remember it. We used it in school, and we also had it. I know we had it in my house with my parents growing up. So there you go. Thanks for calling, Dad. He went to bed at 8, so that's why he's awake now. Oh, man. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're sharing our school memories and some school supply stuff and books and all that fun stuff. 312-981-7200. I still have some more of these old school supplies that are available as well. 301 area code says, I used to read the Classics Illustrated comic books and those eraser tops for your pencils when the original eraser had worn down. Yeah, the big eraser tops that would go on top of the pencil. Those things were cool. I used to use those too. 231 area code said we had a streaker during a pep assembly in 1974. She ran past Sister Claudette and got her to smile, which she never, ever did otherwise. Really? There was a streaker in 1974? Everybody was streaking in 1974, I think. But that's pretty funny, though. It made Sister Claudette smile. That's pretty funny. 262 area code says in 1968, Kenosha, I would put a really thick coat of Elmer's on my ruler, and when it dried, I would cut out long fingernails and stick them over my nails. Or I would pour glue in my palm and peel it off. It was such fun. I did the glue in my palm thing. That was a regular thing. We used to do that all the time. Every kid put the Elmer's glue in their hand and did the peeling thing. And then Trevor in Antioch says, if you heat up the top of an Eraser Mate pen, the ink poops out of the tip. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep that in mind. I'm just wondering how that was discovered. And then finally, Jesse says, scented erasers smelled bad. Okay.
All right.
Going to break for the news here, and then we'll come back, and I'll wrap up this whole school supply list here of things, and then we'll do some more school memories, some of your favorite school memories and supplies and things like that. 312-981-7200 on WGN. Love this song. 815 area code and Squat requesting Joe Jackson on the radio. So we're going to hear another Joe Jackson song. You know, Dan, criminally underrated artist. Joe Jackson. He's great. And I don't think he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I would imagine not.
I would be surprised if he was.
But man, he's great. Just great. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we're going to wrap up the talk about school memories and stuff. Hey, Vic, do you remember any of your school supplies? Were you big, excited going back to school?
I was thinking earlier about this. I wasn't a big fan of the Trapper Keepers. I can remember how they felt in my hand, and I just never liked the way I never liked them. But I do remember, the only thing I remember about school supplies are the peachy folders. Do you guys remember those?
Peachy folders.
They were huge where I lived in California. Every kid had. I Googled them, and you can still buy them. But they're very retro. They're the yellow folders. I don't know if they were big here. They were yellow. You know, they had, you open them up, they were just a single folder, and they had like images of football players and, you know, tennis players and just a bunch of sports activities all over them. So for some reason, we would like to, you know, we'd draw on them and,
yeah,
you know, and get people to write us messages.
Was Peachy the name of the company?
Yeah, P-E-E, second word, C-H-E-E, I believe.
Okay.
But anyway, you can Google it, and peachy folders, and that was the only supply I remember. But those were very popular where I grew up.
Yeah, wow. And they would just have sort of generic pictures of athletes and stuff like that?
Yeah, they were hand-drawn.
Oh,
right,
I see.
They were hand-drawn. Like, you just have to Google it, and you'll see what I mean. But they were just generic images of sports activities. Why we liked them? No idea.
No idea, but you did.
Yep.
But you did. Did you have a protractor and a compass as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some more texts that are coming in here. 312 area code says cigar boxes. Well, that would be, you would use a cigar box to keep your pencils and stuff in, and erasers and things like that. Some people would use cigar boxes for that. I know I think I did for when I was in grade school for a little while. 262 area code says, didn't Bic have a pen with four different inks in one pen? Yes, it had the little things that you would push down. You know, one would be red, one would be blue, one would be green, one would be black, and you could press it down. Whichever one you press down is the pen that would come out. And they were very colorful. In the tops of the pens where you would push the little button down, they were all lined up around the top of the pen, each one with different color. Oh, I loved those. Man, I loved, that was a pen that I loved. And they were thicker because there were like four or five different pens inside, little skinny pens inside. 301 area code says lead pencils and refills. You know, the thing about using the lead pencil refill, like a pen with the you got the lead inside, is that they would always break. Like the lead, it was so thin. You know, the tube of lead that's in there, the stick of lead that's in there, was so thin that it would snap off. I hated using the plastic sort of pencils that you would push the top of to get the ink or to get the lead to come out of the bottom. It just seems too skinny to me. I'd rather have like a regular pencil, you know, because the lead is much thicker, even though you're going to sharpen it down to a big point. 630 area code says Mr. Sketch markers were the best thing anyone could get in their stockings at Christmas. Wow, I missed out on this, I think. I just don't remember the very specific Mr. Sketch. Dan, did you like ever using the pencil that was the in a pen cartridge and you press the top and the little lead would come out of the bottom?
I did not, because it would inevitably break.
It's exactly what I was just saying. It was too skinny. Like the thing of, I hated those things. Just a regular pencil. I mean, you can sharpen the hell out of a pencil. That's fine. But the lead inside of a pencil is much thicker than inside those automatic deals. Boy, it says also this Mr. Sketch marker. Love your show. Thank you very much. 312 area code says a little birdie told me that Steve Cochran likes to steal and hold and hoard ballpoint pens. What are we starting here now? A mystery? He likes to steal and hoard ballpark Franks?
Them too.
Ballpoint pens. Is that right? I didn't know that. 847 area code says, in 1964, we had to buy Schaefer cartridge pens or whatever cartridge pens. They wanted us to learn to write with these in fifth grade. So you had to buy a specific cartridge pen. That seems a little crazy to me. You had to learn how to write with that. Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number here on WGN. Here's Nick. He's on the road on WGN. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Nick. I tuned in late, but I don't think you mentioned these, and I guarantee you had one, if not both.
Okay.
The Frito Bandito pencil erasers that came in the lunch, the lunch, you know, the Frito lunch pack that your mom and dad would throw in your lunch, and they were the erasers that they're of the Frito Bandito guy that you would put on the back of your pencil.
And he was on the top of the pencil. You would put him on top of the pencil. I do remember that. Yeah, right. I absolutely
there
remember
two of them.
That.
There was that one, and there was a guy called W.C. Fritos. He kind of looked like W.C. Fields, and he had that big top hat when he was an eraser.
I remember that. You totally reminded me, and now it all came back. I haven't.
I just had my mom buy those just to get the damn eraser.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. I like W.C. Fritos. That's pretty funny right there.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Okay, buddy, take care. There you go. 312-981-7. Dan, you remember W.C. Fritos?
I can't say that I do.
The Frito Bandito? You remember the Frito Bandito?
I do know the Frandito Bandito.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Now we'll get back to some of these other ones there. The multicolored pens. That's, again, this is now my dad's probably listening at home going, I like multicolored pens because he's Mr. Penn, I'm telling you. And his favorite actor is Sean Penn, by the way. Hold on a minute now. Wait, hold on.
All right.
That's not true. Multicolored pens. Why use boring black or blue when you could have a pen that had four or more colors? These pens were prone to jamming back in the day, but current models work much more smoothly. Yeah, so we were just talking about that, the multicolored pens. They did jam because there were like four different buttons that you'd have to put down and to push down, and then you would have to deal with like the four different sticks of pen that are inside there that could get jammed. Pencil toppers. We were just talking about that. W.C. Frito. Why did many elementary school kids choose to stick tiny nude trolls on the top of their... they're talking about the trolls, not the erasers. They're just talking about the trolls. Who knows, but you can still get them at Amazon. If you're not into trolls, there are plenty of other fun pencil toppers, like the ones that look like wild animals or crazy koosh-like balls. So, yeah. The trolls, if you put the trolls on top of the pen or pencil, you would straighten up the hair and then take the pen between your hands and spin it and rub it so that the hair would go nuts and then the troll hair would go crazy. Hey, I was just looking up at the TV, Dan. Friends is on, as we know.
Yep.
So what was the because Helen Hunt is on. She just showed up. So there was a crossover, right? What was?
Yes, because Lisa Kudrow played Helen Hunt and Paul Reiser's cleaning lady.
Okay.
Before she was cast on Friends. And so
then they made her a twin?
Yes, I believe that's what they...
Phoebe had a twin.
Phoebe had a twin that was a cleaning lady, if I remember correctly. You shouldn't remember better than I.
I know. Yeah. But it was just she walked into the coffee shop. Helen Hunt walked into the coffee shop and saw Lisa Kudrow and went... And started talking to her, and I think Lisa Kudrow was like, no, I'm Phoebe, you know, you're thinking of my sister Greta, or whatever.
Actually, I think you're pretty close.
Well, no, come on, really?
Something like that.
Really? How about Papa Point pencils? That's a POP-A-point.
Ursula.
Ursula was her name?
Ursula was her name.
Okay. And she was...
She played Ursula was a flaky waitress at Riff's, a local restaurant that Paul and Jamie frequented.
Oh, you know what? The first scene in the show, in the first scene in this episode of Friends, I was watching it when we were doing the news because it started at 3:30, was it was Chandler and Schwimmer at Riff's.
Ah, there you go.
And they were being waited on by Lisa Kudrow, and I think they were like, hey. I think they were like, what, when did you get a job here? You know, or something.
Yeah.
Like that. All right. Well, there you go. I just wanted to give you your early morning Friends rerun update in case you were wondering which episode they were showing. How about this one? Papa Point pencils. Kids never had to sharpen these pencils. When they wore the point down to a nub, they simply pulled it out and inserted it into the back of the pencil, which pushed a new point forward. The new points were super sharp. You could clear ones covered in patterns or even scented. Have clear ones covered in patterns or even scented. They're on Amazon right now. What is that? I've never heard of that before. You ever hear of that?
I did not.
Wow. Never heard of that. All right. And, of course, mini erasers. How useful were the small erasers? Who knows? But now you can get 500 for under $12 on Amazon. You get 500 mini erasers for 12 bucks. And then, of course, pencil boxes. Elementary school kids stored all of their mini pens and pencils in the iconic Space Maker pencil box, which had a distinctive bumped top. Unfortunately, they're not made anymore, although you can find some on eBay and Etsy. I remember those. I remember those specifically, actually. So, all right, there's just some school supplies here. And we got a whole bunch of text we're going to get to in a couple of minutes, but let's break here for the weather, shall we? Let's do that. 815 area code requesting for 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. That would be 815 and Squat requesting Joe Jackson. That's Sunday Papers. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Mick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 a.m. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. We've been talking about school memories and some of the old school supplies that we had that are completely different than what the kids are using today. And 312 area code. I think I'm going to sneeze again. I think. Well, it just feels... hold on. Here we go. I think.
Man, you did look at our fancy new lighting system.
I'm trying to... Well, that didn't happen. I hate when that happens. 312 area code says, did anyone mention three-ring notebooks and the three-hold line notebook paper? Yeah, of course. They're classic. Legendary. We used to use those all the time. Also, how about liquid ink pens? I remember filling my pen every night. We also made our own book covers. Oh, so you mean one of them fancy pens that you have to refill with ink? 815 area code says, Nick, in the 70s, I had to have a paper signed by my parents because of poor grades. My buddy and I went to Randhurst to see Pete Rose, who was in town playing the Cubs. He signed my paper instead of my parents signing it. No, well, hold on a second. So, hey, Pete Rose, my parents couldn't sign it, but Pete Rose acknowledged that I got bad grades and he signed it. What? What? That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Well, that is fantastic.
It's great. It's fantastic. But how would you think of that? I was like, you know what? Instead of having my parents sign it, let's go to Randhurst and have Pete Rose sign it. did Pete Rose bet on whether or not you actually had bad grades?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny, man. 312 area code says, how about in the late 70s when they made you rinse your mouth with fluoride in school and then spit it back into the little Dixie cups? I always hated being picked to walk with the garbage can and collect the spit cups. I vaguely remember that. Now, why would I vaguely remember that? That's something that you should really remember, right?
I would think so.
If you'd have to, you know, rinse your mouth out with fluoride and then spit it back. But I do remember that we had to do that because this is in the 70s, yeah. Jeez. 312 area code says the Paper Mate Ink Joy is the same as the old Bic multicolor. So they still make those. I wonder if my dad's got one of those.
Your dad did check into the commercial break, and he's got an Uncle Sam pen that boxes, depending on which button you press, is the left.
Oh, it boxes. Right. Oh, I've seen it. Yes, he's shown me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got it's an Uncle Sam, and you can press the button and it boxes. He's got so many pens, it's ridiculous. I got him. You know what I got him? I got my parents some lovely stuff for Christmas this past Christmas last year. And the thing that my dad liked the most was I got him a set of pens with different emojis on it.
Ah, very nice.
With, at the top, like big emoji heads at the top. That was the greatest gift that he ever got. These goofy emoji pens, like a whole set of them.
A couple techs that have come in.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
are letting us know with those mechanical pencils, you can get thicker leads so they would not break as easy.
Oh, okay.
847, I always wanted a set of Venus-colored pencils. They were soft and easy to draw and color with. All the cool kids had it, but my father was too cheap and would not buy them. he would only get those weak, hard lead-colored pencils from Bargain Mart.
Bargain Mart? the soft pencils, so that means like they were you could grip them. They had like a grip around them,
I guess.
Yeah,
or the lead was softer, so it'd be easier to.
Oh, I see.
Which made a huge comeback when that whole coloring to relieve stress thing came out. I mean, I saw infomercials for colored pencils.
Yeah. No, that was a huge thing. The coloring deal.
630, has anyone mentioned Crazy Paws? You could blend in vivid, beautiful colors. All right.
Is that related to, is it spelled P-A-A-S?
P-A-Z.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering if it was related to the egg coloring kits.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because when I heard Paws, the first thing I think of when I hear Paws is Easter egg coloring.
That's unfortunately you were not attending CPS school in 1969 because apparently it was 3 cents for milk.
Ooh, that's a bargain. Hey, you know, because of this Canadian and Mexico deal that the White House just did, milk is going to go down.
Oh,
milk's going to go. No more tariffs on the dairy products and stuff coming from Mexico or Canada.
Wow,
and we're going out. So,
I have a friend who grew up in the Pacific Northwest in Alaska, and then in the Pacific Northwest, and she works in the fishing industry, and her palate is so refined that she can tell you the stream or river that the fish she is eating came from because she's eaten so much fish in her life.
Is that right?
Yes. It's quite an astounding superpower that she has. But I now wonder, can you tell us if milk is from Mexico or Canada or
because I have such a refined milk palate? I currently have. I went grocery shopping yesterday morning. On a Monday morning, I went grocery shopping, and I currently have a nice, fresh, it's not a gallon anymore because I drank some of it. It's Jewel, the Jewel brand, because it was on sale. But I'm gonna treat myself at some point and get the Oberweis.
There you go.
Get the really fancy milk for my fancy milk occasions. for my formal milk duties.
And 847, I like the pens. You could turn upside down and the girls wearing a bikini would become naked.
Yeah, of course. So schools in the 1800s, really quickly, there's a couple of facts about what it was like to go to schools in the 1800s. At some schools, boys and girls entered through separate doors. They were kept separate for all lessons. There was no transportation to get to schools. Most schoolhouses were built to serve students within living within 4 or 5 miles, which was considered close enough for them to walk. Wow, that old saying about the old people going, I had to walk 5 miles to school. By the way, they're in the same scene together now. The Phoebe and the Ursula.
Oh,
it's like
fancy.
It's like watching Dead Ringers. Forget trapper keepers and gel pens. There were no fancy school supplies in the 19th and early 20th century. Students had to make do with a slate and chalk. There, could you imagine doing that now? Could you imagine trying to get kids to do that? Yeah, here's your tablet. Here's your tablet, and here's your chalk. Lessons were quite different than they are today. Teachers taught subjects including reading, writing, arithmetic, history, grammar, rhetoric, and geography. Rhetoric? Would that be like English, maybe?
Maybe.
Students should, students would memorize their lessons, and then the teacher would bring them in front of the room as a class to recite what they learned. So the teacher could correct them on things like pronunciation on the spot, while other students continued to work behind them. That's pretty tough, man. Discipline was very strict in those days. Sure, stepping out of line in the 1800s and the early 1900s could result in detention, suspension, or expulsion, but it could also result in a lashing. No lunch was provided by the school, even if families had the money for it. Kids brought their lunches to school in metal pails. Every student drank water from a bucket filled by the older boys using the same tin cup. Geez, I wish I would have gone to school in the 1800s. Sounds like a blast. And then finally, for many, education ended at after just the eighth grade. In order to graduate, students would have to pass a final exam. It included questions like, name the parts of speech and define those that have no modifications. A wagon box is 2 feet deep, 10 feet long, and 3 feet wide. How many bushels of wheat will it hold? And what are elementary sounds? How classified? Sounds like it was a blast to go to school back in those days. All right, let's take a break. The news is coming up next. People are picking stuff that I really like this morning. I love the Thompson Twins. Love them. And I love that song. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, baby, two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. That's the Thompson Twins. 773 area code requesting that. That's Lay Your Hands on Me. It's such a great song. Yeah. So, Dan, do you... Do you get to at least one bear game a year, right?
Typically, Eileen is kind enough to treat me on my birthday week or weekend.
So in November, before it gets like really crazy cold.
Yes.
Now, do you guys do you eat a lot when you go to these bear games?
Well, you know, we do typically get something. She's learned by now that I'm kind of particular when it comes to the stadium food.
Yeah.
Because I will not have, for example, at Wrigley Field, I will not have hot dogs from the concession stands. I will only have a hot dog from the guys carrying it around in the boxes because they're wrapped in the foil and it's got that delicious taste to it that you just can't replicate coming from.
Oh, I see.
From the concession stands. Okay. So,
but so they don't have guys walking around at Soldier Field.
They do not have Soldier Field. So it's usually we find something we like and then we go with it.
Yeah, and they don't even have beer vendors at Soldier Field, do they?
They do not have ones that walk around. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, beer vendors that walk around, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, have you been to, have you been to other NFL stadiums?
I have not. I don't think so, actually. Yeah, no. So
how is it possible that I've been to more?
Well, you're Mr. Road Trip.
NFL stadiums than you have, but I'm not a football guy.
Yeah, well, but, you know, if I was at a... different. Yeah, we had friends who went down for the Saints game, the Bears Saints game last year, and we couldn't swing it. Yeah.
I've been to technically three NFL stadiums. I've been to Soldier Field. This is kind of cheating. I saw a Cleveland game at County Stadium, but it was a Indians game. But Browns played there, so. Wrigley was.
I was going to say you could count Wrigley then. Yeah.
And then Pontiac Silverdome for that fantastic trip. So, we did it at the beginning of baseball season, you know, and we're already 4 weeks into football, but I do have some of the crazy foods that will be sold in the NFL stadiums. And we did it for baseball, and we'll do it for, all the sports coming up. And by the way, are we going to have Rick in next week to do a hockey?
We are. Yeah, we're figuring out. If not next week, the week after.
Okay, cool. Because hockey kicks off officially. It begins on Thursday, which is going to be, if the Cubs win tonight, you're going to be flipping back and forth.
Sports day.
Yep. Okay.
From WGN9 has that helicopter ready for Dave Ennett on the busy sports
day. Oh, yeah, it's going to be a busy sports day for Dave to jump into the... I haven't seen him on TV this morning, so I don't know if he's going to be on TV and then just get helicopter his way here. He's a busy guy, that Dave Ennett.
Does he land on the roof, you think, or does he, like, swim
here on
off?
The roof?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he does land on the roof. So, and it is a busy time for Dave.
It's a very busy
time. Yeah, very, very busy time. So, From the ingenious to the borderline bizarre, here are the 10 noteworthy food items hitting NFL concession stands this season. All right, here's the first one. The Gridiron Challenge Burger. It already sounds like it's going to be insane, just because of the name. You put challenge in the name of a food item, that evokes a little danger.
Yep.
So the Gridiron Challenge Burger is available at Arizona Cardinals University of Phoenix Stadium. That's the name of their stadium?
Yes.
How long has it been the University of Phoenix Stadium?
I want to say a while. Probably is that 10 right? years, yeah.
I don't know why I find that so amusing.
It is pretty funny.
The Gridiron Challenge Burger is made with 5 1/3-pound burger patties, five hot dogs, 5 bratwursts, 8 slices of bacon, 8 chicken tenders, 20 slices of American cheese, 12 ounces of fries, and tanker sauce, quote-unquote, all stacked on a 10-inch bun. And let's not forget the veggies, lettuce, tomato, and pickles. That's insane. The price tag? Get this, Dan. Well, you've read this already, so you know how much it is. It's a 7-pound burger. It's $75. If you're brave enough to go it alone and you can finish it in under an hour, you will be rewarded with a personalized Cardinals jersey and the thrill of seeing yourself on the stadium video board. I would really love to know if anybody's ever finished this. And in under an hour? Come on.
I mean, the Bears did play there 2 weeks ago, so maybe one of our own.
Maybe one of our very own. It's 5 1/3-pound burger patties, 5 hot dogs, 5 bratwursts, 8 slices of bacon, 8 chicken tenders, 20 slices of American cheese, 12 ounces of fries, and tanker sauce, all stacked on a 10-inch bun with lettuce, tomato, and pickles. 7 pounds, and if you can finish it in under an hour, I can't imagine anybody finishing that in under an hour. You got to be insane. Not even the dude from Man vs. Food, I think, would be able to finish that in under an hour. And what? And seriously, if you do that, like when you get to the stadium, I'm going to do the Gridiron Challenge Burger, how are you going to feel the rest of the game? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you slam that down in under an hour, you get yourself a Cardinals jersey, that's great. You get on the Jumbotron, oh, that's awesome. But enjoy what happens to your stomach. So... Maybe we can track down if anybody's ever actually.
I'm not seeing anybody who is.
Because it's that you can't do it. That cannot. I mean, that's insane. All right. How about this? Battle Red Tacos. These are available at the Houston Texans NRG Stadium. Frequent eaters of Flamin' Hot Cheetos will know that's one of the snack's few drawbacks is the bright red residue that it leaves on your fingers. Thankfully, the brilliant chefs at the Texan Stadium have encrusted chicken tenders with Flamin' Hot Cheetos, topped them with mango salsa and a sriracha mayo, and nestled them all conveniently in a flour tortilla. So you get the Flamin' you ever had the Flamin' Hot Cheetos?
I have not.
Yeah, I'm not really into stuff that's flaming hot, but people love those things.
They do.
All right, how about...
Quick update on the Gridiron Challenge Burger.
Yeah.
The head chef, Sean Kavanaugh, at the University of Phoenix Stadium. Kavanaugh said 3 of his staff members tried the challenge Monday, but failed to finish in time, if at all. One of them that tried the challenge actually called in sick today, so we're hoping he heals okay.
Well, what do you expect? What do you expect under an hour? 5 1/3-pounds burger patties, 5 hot dogs, 5 bratwursts, 8 slices of bacon, 8 chicken tenders, 20 slices of American cheese, 20 ounces of fries, tanker sauce on a bun with lettuce, tomato, and pickles. No way. No way. I am not shocked at all that person called in sick the next day.
There is a diet version.
Oh, really?
Which includes all the same ingredients, but in significantly smaller portions.
So you don't have to spend $75 on it. Mm-hmm. You could get all those crazy combinations of tastes for less than $75.
This did not make the list, but they offer a churro donut sundae. That sounds delicious.
A churro donut sundae. Yeah, that does sound good. Boy, that University of Phoenix, they're known for their good food. They're known for their good food.
It's too bad they don't have an actual physical cafeteria.
Yeah, you have to eat it at your own house.
You can take a class on how to make it.
But you got to have your computer on. You have to have your computer on in order to eat the food from the University of Phoenix. All right, let's take a break. We got a break here for weather, and then we'll come back, and we've got more borderline, bizarre, crazy, and noteworthy food items that you can get while you travel around the NFL stadiums this season. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you've ever had anything weird at a stadium and a crazy, crazy stadium food, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number for talk and text. All right. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 2 for Tuesday continuing. Yeah! And that's 773 area code requesting Thompson Twins with Lies, which is a jam. Welcome back, everyone. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk and text. We're talking about some outrageous and crazy food items that are being served at NFL stadiums across the country. And want to know from you if you've eaten anything crazy at a stadium or did one of those crazy challenges. We just described this insane gridiron challenge burger and then the battle red tacos, which consist of chicken tenders that are encrusted with flaming hot Cheeto crust. And then and they're all served in a tortilla. And now we come to this one. Kingdom Inferno Chicken Sandwich. Okay. When you put challenge in the name of a food item or inferno, that there's got to be an issue here. Kingdom Inferno Chicken Sandwich. This is available at the Kansas City Chiefs Arrowhead Stadium. This chicken tender sandwich is topped with a mayo made from the hottest pepper known to man, the Carolina Reaper. And if that's not spicy enough for you, pepper jack cheese, sliced jalapenos, and buffalo sauce turn the heat all the way up. Yeah, no. No. The Carolina Reaper. I know people love the hot stuff. You know, they love the hot food. But yeah, I can't do that. That's just insane. All right, how about this? Beef pho. You can get pho from the Seahawks. The Seahawks enjoy the hearty Vietnamese soup. They can try a version of it with braised beef, rice noodles, bean sprouts, Thai basil, Fresno chilies, and, of course, the rich pho broth. That's good stuff, Dan. You ever have pho?
I have not.
No, you wouldn't like it.
Oh, I wouldn't.
It's soup. Yeah. It's very soupy. But the noodles are good, you know what I mean? And you can get a nice piece of beef in there that wouldn't be. But you don't eat chicken noodle soup even?
I do, you know, like if it's a substantial soup where it's kind of the liquid is, yeah.
So like a cream like a clam chowder maybe would be okay?
Sure, yes, I will indulge in that.
Yeah. I mean the New England style.
Yes.
Not the Manhattan.
Nope.
How about this? North Shore Halouski. These are delicious little potato and cheese-filled pierogi pillows topped with braised cabbage and finished with sliced kielbasa. Well, where is that now? I want that right now. Man, doesn't that sound good?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Cheese-filled pierogi pillows topped with braised cabbage and finished with sliced kielbasa? Come on now. They don't say where that one's from. They don't say where you can get that one. How about this? Closed on Sunday chicken sandwich. What is it, a Chick-fil-A? What? Closed on Sunday chicken sandwich is, you can get it at the Atlanta Falcons Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yes, Chick-fil-A. Or a variation? Yes, Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays, even the one inside Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which means they aren't open for many of the Falcons' home games. Fortunately, Falcon fans can get their fix with the closed on Sunday chicken sandwich instead, which, despite the name, is served on Sundays at Chef Gillespie's Chicken Stadium Outpost Game Changer. His version comes with fried chicken, pickles, hot sauce, and a sweet pickled mayonnaise. Why, Why would Chick-fil-A bother to put a... Why would they bother to go into a football stadium? We talked about this before. Because there are other events that take place at these stadiums, correct? That don't take place on Sunday.
Right, yeah.
All right.
The Haluski pierogies.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, Pittsburgh Steelers, Heinz Field.
There we go. There we go. That sounds fantastic. How about the DMV Super Burrito? What does that mean? You got to wait in line to get it? You got to wait in a really terrible long line? It's available at the Washington Redskins FedEx Field. The DMV Super Burrito, like the Gridiron Challenge Burger, this behemoth falls squarely into the shareable category for most normal humans. The Redskins' new DMV Super Burrito tips the scale at around 5 pounds. It is stuffed with 3 pounds of chicken, a half-smoked sausage, 2 rounds of Spanish, 2 pounds of Spanish rice, lettuce, tomato, avocado, and black bean salsa. It does not say whether there is a challenge that exists with... the DMV Super Burrito. Okay, why is it called the DM? Why is it called DMV Super Burrito?
I'm searching for that now.
That doesn't make any. I mean, unless DMV must stand for something else in Washington. But come on now, 3 pounds of chicken, half smoked sausage, 2 pounds of Spanish rice, lettuce, tomato, avocado, and black bean sauce. It's 5 pounds. No, man, that's not something that I would enjoy. Pretty sure that's not something that I would enjoy. I enjoy a good burrito.
I know. This is a bad conversation. I might have to stop at Taco Burrito King after the show now.
Oh, this sounds pretty interesting. Dungeness Crab Pretzel. Whoa. I am intrigued. Dungeness Crab Pretzel. That's available at the San Francisco 49ers Levi's Stadium. No, it's not your typical fan fare, but the Bay Area is known for its Dungeness crabs, and the 49ers have taken full advantage of this latest concession creation. Think lobster roll on a pretzel baguette with knuckle and claw crab meat tossed in a garlic aioli, Dijon mustard, and chives. Oh, man. Doesn't say how much it costs, though. I bet that's a pretty penny. You know what I mean? Dungeness crab pretzel? That's got to be a lot of dough. You know, because, I mean, you're at a football stadium, first of all, so.
You know, although when I was having a dinner with Herb the other night.
Yeah.
You know, he was telling us of the fish at Costco out in Washington and, you know, things that would go for like $75 here. You know, he's like, you can buy for like $16
there. That makes sense. In Seattle. Yeah, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. So maybe it is a little bit cheaper than
right.
Great. How about a brat in a blanket? Oh, this is a shocker. It's at Lambeau Field. That's a brat in a blanket. Let's see. Do we have bratwurst? Check. Cheese curds? Check. Beer incorporated in the mustard? Check. Put on a cheese head and try one for yourself at Lambeau Field for the quintessential Green Bay experience. That's, you know, there's no other stadium that would, if you describe that to anybody, you would say, yeah, that's Packers.
Yeah.
And then dessert nachos. And this is at the Detroit Lions Ford Field. Oh, it's not the Pontiac. Ford took it away from Pontiac? Is that right?
Or Pontiac.
Yeah. At Ford Field, the Lions. Well, wait a minute. Is that the same location, right? That's a new
stadium. No, I believe it is.
Yeah, the Pontiac is torn down. The Pontiac. Or maybe it's just used for concerts and stuff, maybe? At Ford Field, the Lions serve up fried tortilla chips dusted with cinnamon and sugar, then topped with smoked chocolate cherry Nutella sauce. Chocolate-covered Michigan cherries, sprinkles, and whipped cream. Oh, my God. That's a lot right there.
That is lovely.
That is a lot. Fried tortilla chips dusted with cinnamon and sugar, topped with smoked chocolate cherry Nutella sauce, and chocolate-covered Michigan cherries, sprinkles, and whipped cream. Except for the cherries for me. I can't do the cherry thing. Not a big cherry guy.
301, who's our listener in Maryland, lets us know in the D.C. area, DMV stands for D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Oh, that's okay. Now that
makes
a
lot of sense.
Total sense now.
Absolutely.
And thank you for that.
Kathy was at, just wants us the separate but related topic. Kathy was at Walmart and she saw mayo chup there.
Oh, Okay, Mayo Chup
has hit the shelves.
Mayo Chup has hit the shelves. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? When we were talking about. And what was the name of the product that we came up with? It was a
Colonel Ichnobohefus's
Ketchinase. It'll be available soon at the Jewels. All right, cool. Well, there you go. There are some crazy things, including a 7-pound burger that you can eat in under an hour and then call in sick to work the next day. That's what we've learned. That's the lesson that we've learned there. All right, those are available. Those are some of the crazier things available for this football season at your NFL stadiums. We're going to take a break. The news is coming up next, and then we're going to talk about behind-the-scenes secrets of New York City cab drivers. Ooh. Ooh. Even Latka. All right, we have to take a break for the news right after this. That's two for Tuesday. 301 area code, getting weird with the Carpenters. That's the Carpenters, by the way. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Trying to get all Prague, Dan. It seems like the brother and sister trying to get all Prague there.
I had never heard that.
It sounded like from a Pink Floyd album. Wow. All right. Two for Tuesday. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, we are here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich comes in at 5 with the opening bell, and my main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your Tuesday morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. More than 50,000 yellow taxi drivers navigate New York City streets each year, carrying residents, workers, and tourists from one destination to another. Each car will log up to 70,000 miles a year on the job. Needless to say, the city's taxi drivers have seen it all and then some. To get a better idea of what their job entails, Mental Floss asked 40-year veteran driver Eugene Solomon, who wrote Confessions of a New York Taxi Driver, to give us a glimpse of life on the other side of the partition. Here's what he says about the tips, the tipsy, and why he sometimes has to call your mom. 40 years on the job, Dan. That's a long time driving a cab.
That is very long.
So, they have a secret signal for just for police. Yeah. Although cabbies aren't targeted for robberies as frequently as they were during the height of New York's crime epidemic in the 70s, drivers still need to take precautions. If there is any sign of trouble, Solomon can hit a panic button underneath the dash to summon the nearest NYPD cruiser. It's an amber light that flashes from the front of the cab, behind the grill, and from the rear. I've never had to use it because I was in physical danger, but I have used it when I was in danger of not being paid the fare. Well, I wonder if they don't have that here in Chicago, right? Like a special button? We got some taxi drivers who are probably listening right now. That's pretty cool. You get a secret signal just for the police if you're in trouble. Boom, hit that button, and the nearest cop will come by. So legally, they don't have to give you a ride. Oh, no kidding. I've had that experience. You know, because I've taken cabs many, many, many times, Dan, as you know, because I don't drive, and I've taken cabs a lot. And it always makes me nuts when, you know, I'll either flag a cab down and they won't open the door and they'll roll the window down, the passenger side window, and go, "Where are you going?" And then it's like, "Well, I'm going here." And then they'll go, "Oh, no, I'm gonna." My thing is this. Don't have your light on. If you don't want to pick somebody up, because I don't raise my arm for a cab that doesn't have its light on. You know?
Right.
Just don't have it on. If you don't want to give me a ride, that's cool. That's fine. But don't, and then pull over and go, "Yeah, no, I don't like where you're going." I don't like where you're going. But I guess according to this, legally, they can't give you a ride, or at least in New York. But it was funny because one morning you had a little bit more work to do and I had to get home sooner. So I walked over and I jumped in a cab, and I walked over. It was weird because I walked over to the Hyatt Regency, which is right next to us. And they have a cab stand right outside, but I felt terrible because the picketers were out there, and I was going out of my way to say, "Look, I'm not staying here, I'm not crossing your picket line to cross your picket line." Because I side with anybody who's on strike, you know, for better work conditions. You know what I mean? I was in a union for a very long time, and so So, like, I felt weird that I had to do that. And then I walk up, and there's, like, four cabs. And they're, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd just gotten off the air, so it's a little after 5 in the morning. So I walk up to the first guy, and he's standing outside his cab. Like, his cab is empty, but he's the first guy in the cab stand, so he's standing right there. And I go, is this you? And I point to the cab, and I raise my hand, and he goes, yeah, I'm waiting for someone. And I'm like, you're waiting for someone. He's like, yeah, that's it, I'm waiting for someone. I'm like, all right. So then I walk over to the next cab in line, and I raise my hand, and so I go to open the door, and there's somebody in the back seat, and they're playing video games. There's already a guy in the back seat, and they were playing, like, they had handheld video game. They're playing, like, a video game. And I'm like, you're not kidding. He's like, no, I don't want, no. And his light was on. All these guys, by the way, had their lights on. They're open lights. And then the third guy, I walk up to him, and I raise my hand, and I'm like, and he said, go out, come on in. And I get in, and I'm like, how come these, why didn't you get a ride from these two guys up here? And I'm like, they both said no. He's like, these guys are jerks. And the guy started going off on the cabbies. These guys are jerks. All they want, they're going to wait here until they, because they, all the guys, all those guys that are waiting there want someone who's staying at the hotel to come out and go to O'Hare. That's what they want, you know, because it's a big fare. And then you, when you're at O'Hare, you get another, you know what I mean? And that starts
right,
the whole thing.
Right, automatic.
Yeah. And so, they refused to take me because I wasn't going to O'Hare. But the thing is, you know, like, neither of the guys asked me where I was going, who refused me, but I had no luggage.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was just
wearing a t-shirt and jeans.
Exactly. I'm not a tourist. I'm just clearly like some dude who needs to get a ride home. And so I told the guy where I was going, and he's like, all right, fine. These guys are jerks. And he rolls the window down to the first guy who's still standing outside at the front cab. And he rolls the window down, and he goes, I got your fare, and then drove off. And, you know, and it's my trip where I need to go. It's a pretty solid fare.
Right.
It's not like I'm going three blocks. It's a pretty solid fare, man.
Right, right. I mean,
so.
And also, it's also an easy comeback to downtown because you're literally off of the expressway.
Right. You get off, turn around, go back downtown if you want to go downtown. If you want to go to the airport, you can just jump
around. And that hour, that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they'd be stupid not to take me. I mean, because it's a solid fare. It's not O'Hare.
Right.
But it's a solid fare, and I'm a good tipper. And it's right. You are literally right next to the Kennedy. You can get right back on the Kennedy.
Kennedy probably end up two behind the other two guys.
Exactly. And those guys will still be sitting there.
Right.
You know? I bet that's what happened. I bet the dude went back to the Hyatt and said, let's see if these two idiots are still sitting there after I just made, you know, I just made some money.
Yeah. So 312 says it's not legal to refuse a destination in Chicago.
Oh, it's not. Okay. Well, in New York, I guess they have different laws, because here's what it says about New York. If you're swaying rather than standing on the curb, a taxi driver in New York City is under no legal obligation to pull over and let you hop in. Cabbies can ignore anyone they feel falls under a drunk and disorderly label. The skill is being able to recognize the completely plastered person by their body language and lock the doors before they can gain entry to the cab. Once they're in the cab, the person or persons who put them there have quickly disappeared. That drunk, who may be semi-coherent, is now the problem of the taxi driver. And that's a solution for that. Well, I mean, I don't blame these guys for doing that. You know, but having been in both positions, you know, crap faced looking for a cab, I've done that many, many times. But I can totally understand why people would not, you know, pick up some idiot who's completely soused. I mean, that's not, you know, there are so many things that could happen. The guy's loaded. Yep. He might not have money.
Right.
Might not have a credit card. He might get stiffed. He might do something horrible. He might throw up in the back seat of your car, which happens a lot.
Yeah. I know, actually, the head of the taxi union was on with Johnny B, so obviously this was years ago. But at that time, they didn't have a fine for people who threw up in their back seat. And they were campaigning for that.
It's a $500 fine now.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, to get that cleaned and that smell doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You know, Dimitri, I've heard so many stories. Dimitri Samarov is my good friend, who's a great artist and a really cool guy and a great writer. He drove a cab for a long time here and in Boston. The number of stories that guy has, that all these guys who drive cabs, you know, the stories that they can tell, you know. And this guy, 40 years in New York? Oh, man. But no, I mean, I don't blame him for not picking up a guy who appears to be completely smashed. I've had to pour a couple of people into a cab when I was bartending because I wasn't going to serve them because they were so, well, some of them my friends. And I can't tell you the number of times that I would put somebody that I knew or somebody I didn't know or maybe a regular who I wasn't going to serve anymore and put them into a cab and then throw a 20 at the cabbie out of my tip jar and say just, you know, and I, you know, tell them where they're going. But it was funny because my friend Steve Walker, he came into, I was bartending at Ginger's Ale House at the time. And Steve came in and he was completely, I mean, he was annihilated. And for some reason, he was soaking wet and it wasn't raining. And Steve comes in and he comes up and he's annihilated. And he comes up and there's something on his glasses, like he's wearing glasses or something on his glasses. And I go, "It's on your glasses." And he just goes, "Gum." It's like, piece of gum chewed up on his glasses. And then I'm like, "What's the matter? What's going on with you, man? You're all wet. Why?" And then he just goes, "Shane McGowan." That was his. And then right then, as soon as he said Shane McGowan, I went, "All right, I know what kind of condition this guy's in." And so he looked, he said he was fine. And of course, he ordered a Guinness and a shot of Jameson because he was just at Shane McGowan. So I started to pour him the Guinness, and then I saw he got up and he walked over to the jukebox and he started yelling at the girl at the jukebox, and then I stopped pouring him a Guinness. And he was in really obnoxious, and he was really, really bad. He didn't remember it, like, you know, 3 days later. I'm like, "You were a real jerk." So I put him in the cab. I get money out of my till, and I put him in the cab. I'm sorry, my tip jar, not out of the till, out of the tip jar. And I bring him out, and I have him wait outside because he was being obnoxious to everybody. So I had to wait on a corner. But another thing he did, he was completely annihilated. He's standing on the corner, and there used to be Kitty Corner from Ginger's Ale House on the corner. There was a video store, and so he's standing on the corner. And he's just kind of wobbling around. I mean, really, the kind of guy that this taxi driver would not pick up. So he's kind of like wobbling back and forth, and someone, because I was keeping an eye on him. I didn't want him to get hit by a truck or something, you know, because he was so wasted. And I was keeping an eye out for the cab because I'd called the cab. So someone comes out of the video store with like this is VHS days. Someone comes out of the video store with like a VHS movie, and he goes, "Hey, hey." And the guy looks at him. He goes, "That movie sucks." I was like, "I cannot wait for this cab to get here. I cannot wait for this cab to get here." So the cab arrives. Thank God. We pour him in the back. I bring a couple of guys out with me. You know what I mean? We pour him in the back, and God bless him. I've known Steve for a really long time, and we've gotten drunk together many times. We had gotten drunk together many times. So we pour him in the back seat of the car, and the taxi driver rolls the window down, and I go, "Here." And I gave him like $30 or something. I was like, "Here, he's really, really drunk. You can take him back. He lives in Roscoe Village." And then, as I'm walking, he's like, "Okay, that's cool." 'Cause I gave him a ton of money. And so he's about to drive away. And as I'm walking away from the car, the taxi starts to pull away and the guy goes, "Where to?" And Steve goes, "To my effing house." I felt terrible for the taxi driver. And that is one example of why I don't disagree with the rule that these guys have of not picking up someone who might be in that kind of condition. So, all right, let's take a break here for weather, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about more secrets for the New York. Now, this is specifically New York City. New York City cab drivers. The rules might be different here in Chicago. And if you have any unspoken rules or, you know, encounters, or you're a driver, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's our last two for Tuesday for the morning. Yeah! And it's 301 area code with the Carpenters, and that's Solitaire. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 lovely floors above downtown New York, Chicago. Talking about New York taxi drivers and their unwritten rules and secrets. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Perhaps you drive a cab here. You have any kind of stories locally. And Steve Grzanich is coming up with the opening bell, but also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Let's see this. Ready for this one, Dan? They can execute a reverse drunk drop. If Solomon finds himself stuck with a slobbering semi-conscious drunkard who's been stuffed into a cab in what's known as a drunk drop. I didn't know that that was called a drunk drop.
Yeah.
It makes, of course, it makes sense. It's exactly what it is. You're dropping a drunk in the back of a cab. He may well decide to return the problem to the scene of the pickup. That entails circling the taxi around the block and then carrying the inebriated passenger back to the bar or club where they were discharged from in the first place. There have been a couple of instances in the last year in which I did recognize that a drunk drop was about to be perpetuated, and I did execute the reverse drunk drop effectively. I love the terms. The reverse drunk. Here. Nope, I'm sorry. You're not dropping them off with me. I'm dropping them back off with you. They're driving in a very slow race with so many cabs competing for street-hailing passengers rather than the scheduled pickups found in smaller cities. It's up to individual cab drivers to take the initiative and make aggressive plays for fares. Oh, my God. We get most of our business from street hails, he says. So if you drive a yellow cab, you are literally in competition with all the other yellow cabs on the street for business. The first cabbie to get the passenger gets the prize. Most people don't realize that during many hours of a shift, passengers can be hard to come by. So it's very competitive among the drivers trying to get to the silhouette of a person two blocks down the avenue who is raising their hand in the air. It looks like a NASCAR race in slow motion. Sometimes it's not in slow motion, dude. How about when you gotta love this, you know? Let's say when it's a one way street and it's three lanes, you know, three lanes of one way.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the right lane, and in the far left lane is a cabbie, and someone hails the cab on the right side of the street. They will just barrel right through you. They will just like, boom, I'm getting my fare, and I don't care. Cabbies who just stop in the middle of the street, just stop and get the car, you know, like, and blocking everybody behind them.
Mm-hmm.
They want those fares, that's for sure. And in New York, it's more insane. I mean, it's pretty crazy in downtown Chicago when people are battling for the fares and doing really obnoxious driving and, you know, not using a signal and busting into lanes and stuff. But in New York, it's insane. And I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche, but it's true. There is a skill to hailing a cab. Waving your arms like you're singing into quicksand is not necessarily the most effective way to get the driver's attention. First, step a bit but not too far into the street. Then you must wave your arm or another body part as circumstances may dictate in order to catch the attention of the driver. Finally, you must establish eye contact if possible in order to signal to the driver that he is with whom you are attempting to communicate, and that you are not actually trying to get the attention of your friend across the street. That sounds about right. Yeah. I think I hail taxis pretty well. How about this? Sometimes people have no destination in mind. Though it happens rarely, Solomon, who, by the way, we're talking about this guy who has been a cab driver for 40 years in New York City, has had the experience of someone entering his taxi without a purpose. I drove this particular woman around for an hour, and the only words she said to me was, just drive, until she finally said, take me back where you picked me up. She was just going through some stuff, man. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
She was just going through some stuff. Drivers hate when you close the partition separating the front seat from the back seats. It's considered rude. Solomon says, as well as pointless, it does not prevent sounds from being overheard. People really think it's soundproof? Now, they're supposed to be closed for their protection.
Right.
You know? And then you have that little flap.
Yeah,
that plastic.
To
put the cash in. But, you know, most of the time when I'm in a cab, that's open. It's always open.
Right, right.
Other dislikes. Customers opening the back door while getting in, but continuing to chat with friends and tourists who don't know tipping is customary. And passengers suggesting they drive safely. Oh, man. What a great idea. Why didn't I think of that, he says. Want to make a New York City driver happy? Turn off the taxi TV, the seat-mounted monitor in the back that plays programming commercials on a loop all day, every day. I turn it off every time I get in a cab.
Oh, really?
Every time I get in a cab, I turn it off, and that's exactly why. You're driving that cab around for 12 hours. You get to hear Rachel Ray over and over and over again. No. No, 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 no. I seriously.
That's the only time I get to see Steve Dolinsky's restaurant suggestions.
Well, that's true. But seriously, you know, I mean, and this is exactly the reason. Sure. I think this guy's heard this, like, you know, this woman or this man who's driving this cab has had to hear this crap over and over and over again. I turn it off every single time. I remember back in that summer of 99 when we went out to New York for 3 weeks with Vinyl Shop. And we stayed in Manhattan. We were in Lower Manhattan. The theater that we did the show in was in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan. Took a lot of cabs. And during that summer, or during that year, that was when they did this campaign where you would get in, and as soon as, like, the fare would come on, like, he'd turn the fare box on, you'd hear a celebrity tell you to fasten your seatbelt. And it would crack me up every time. I kept getting Regis. Because there was Whoopi Goldberg, a lot of New York known, sure, you know, actors and actresses and celebrities who would tell you to sit, you know, to strap in and, you know, put on your seatbelt, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so it was something that obviously these cab drivers had to hear it every single time somebody got into a cab. But I can't, like, every cab I get at one point, because I took a lot of cabs. I was there for 3 weeks. I took a lot of cabs. It got to the point where every time I got in, it was like, this is Regis Philbin. You got to, your final answer is you should buckle up. So, all right. Well, those are just a few things that cabbies, secret cabbie stuff from New York. So there you go. All right. We're going to break here. We got the news coming up. Kevin Powell will be joining us.
Yes.
The Sports on Rokan show. And we're going to talk about what happens to the Cubs tonight and everything else that's sports related. And that'll be coming up tomorrow morning right on WGN. The news is coming up.